It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis, Stacey Higginbotham are here. We're going to talk about new Google privacy rules, and we'll even kind of deep dive into the settings. We'll play a little bit with Google Goggles with some surprising results and take a look at some of the latest robots from Boston Dynamics. They're not scary at all. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, episode 360, recorded Wednesday, July 6th, 2016. The Dishwashing Dog Bot. This Week at Google is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twig and get $50 off one of their Ring of Security kits, the bundle kit or the pro bundle kit, with their limited time offer. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/twig and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest really from the Googleverse, from everywhere in the world. Jeff Jarvis is here. He's home. So glad you're home.
I'm at school. I'm back. I have connectivity. I have a wire plugged into the computer.
Oh, I'm loving it.
It works.
I'm loving it.
I pissed off somebody on Twitter last week. Oh, Jarvis, and I worked 3 hours to get on the darn show and you give me hell.
People just are mean. And I love the picture of you in the modeling session that was going on at the poolside.
Yeah.
Yeah. This looked like you had a good time. Did you ever get to talk to Jim Jarmusch?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Too bad. Show instead. Too bad. Professor of journalism at the City University of New York. That's where he is right now. Are you doing office hours? Are there kids there?
No, not many. Well, there's our social students are here, but I haven't been here for like 2 weeks.
Just checking the mail. Visiting.
I had a lot of meetings, but between VidCon and Mexico City.
That's right.
And seeing my parents in Florida, I'm back.
Good. Well, we like
I'm
having you
back. I'm
going
to put down the shade behind me because the sun is not working, so...
I know, but I like seeing the kind of sweaty, Manhattan behind you.
Should I leave Manhattan?
It's sweaty. You're there on what, West 44th?
West 40th. Center of the universe, Times Square, New York,
yep.
New York.
Yep. Kind of my nice locale. Also with us from Austin, Texas, Stacey Higginbotham.
Not the center of the universe.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. The People's Republic of Texas. Are you kidding?
Like,
are you guys going to secede? Is that true?
No. If Texas secedes, Austin's going to have to secede, and then we'll be like an island nation.
Oh, it'll be like we'll have to do an airlift. It'll be like East and West Berlin.
I was going to say like Puerto Rico, but
there'll be a wall. We have an airlift. There'll be a corridor.
So
I'm going to Austin tomorrow. I'm flying to Austin tomorrow for the Association. Well, it used to be called the American Association or the Association of Alternative Newspapers.
Oh.
But now they made the N stand for something else.
Like the Berkeley Barb.
Right, the Bay Guardian.
Bay Guardian.
Those days.
Yeah.
The Austin Voice. Chronicle.
Now mostly they're just, classified ads and...
Bar recommendations,
exactly.
What's the one in Austin?
Austin Chronicle.
That's right.
Is it still around?
It is.
Yeah. It feels like Austin could keep an alternative paper alive.
Oh, some would argue that our local paper is an alternative paper. So
right.
And we have the Texas Tribune,
which is amazing.
Amazing. Which is awesome.
And yet, Austin's the state capital.
Yes.
Oh, I'm just saying. And yet, it's kind of an interesting mix. It's as if Berkeley were the capital of California. It'd just be a strange mix. You know what I'm saying? Can you dig where I'm coming from?
Sort of. Austin for a time was, not Austin. Austin was a Democratic
Texas.
State.
No, when he had Ann Richards, great governor, Ann Richards.
Yeah.
Thought the world of her. I'll never forget going, it was South by Southwest, going to visit the Capitol building there and the Statue of Slavery. It was great. I'll never forget that. No, I'm sorry. Did I say slavery? I meant states' rights. What am I saying? I am so sorry.
They've taken some of those down, and we just had a thing where we renamed a couple of our elementary schools from Robert E. Lee to something else. So we're getting there.
Wow.
It was problematic.
So how is life without Uber and Lyft there, Stacey?
You know, I just took, we just went out for a while, and I took a site called Fasten, and that was really nice, and the driver gets most of the revenue there.
How is that allowed, though? I mean, I thought Austin made it illegal to do that kind of thing, ride sharing.
So Austin isn't, they have a month to get their fingerprinting, and Austin actually wasn't actively pushing for Uber or Lyft to follow the regulations.
Oh.
They just were like, hey, look, we want to come to terms and set something up that's tenable going forward. And Uber and Lyft were like, well, we have written some legislation for you.
Oh, geez.
Nope.
They had a snit fit, basically, and said, that's it. We're out of here. And you'll see. You'll be sorry.
And we are, because Paul Graham keeps making some snide comments about us, and it hurts.
Oh, ow.
Austin is just sad.
So Fasten is like F-A-S-T-E-N?
Fasten,
F-A-S-E-N, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. I've got to look at the app. where'd you go?
Yeah, Fasten, like fasten your seatbelt.
Yeah.
And before you get in the car, Fasten. Okay.
There's Austin Rideshare, and then there is a Facebook group that I'm a member of.
So there's plenty of ways to get...
There's Get
It really,
Me.
It was really only over this background check issue, and it didn't seem like the state was being unreasonable about it, or the city was being unreasonable.
The city.
Yeah.
It was that. They also wanted the ability... There were a couple other things in the Uber-written legislation, like letting them stop in lanes of traffic to discard... passengers
that seems like a bad idea.
So there were just some things that, you know, the city was trying to negotiate. And
I think Uber certainly, I don't know about Lyft, but Uber has certainly in other locales been kind of chased out by the incumbents, by the taxis and the medallion owners and so forth, but they use that as a mantle of goodwill, and sometimes it's not always that the case that they really should probably do what Austin asked them to do, right?
I think the city was willing to negotiate. I don't think Uber would have liked all the things that they would have gotten, so I can understand. But
it wasn't about protecting the taxis this time.
Oh,
well,
I'm sure
the taxi companies back us.
Yeah, the taxi companies were. Part of this too. They don't. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's not a total citizen uprising or anything like that.
Right. But surviving.
We're surviving. It's a little less convenient. If you're really trashed, you're going to have a hard time. You're going to be like, "Why doesn't my Uber app work?" But other than that, you'll be okay.
My mom, who's 83, I set up with my my credit card on her Uber account, but she still can't figure it out. And because I'll tell you why, she's so used to calling for a cab. And so she doesn't understand that all you do is you open it and you say, get me a car, and you can see it approach. It doesn't register because she's so...
I can't get my parents to think about a smartphone at all. How did you get your mom to use a smartphone?
I just kept giving them to her. You know what? I'll tell you how. I got her I think it was called a Cricket, one of the smartphones for the elderly.
Yeah.
Oh, like the Jitterbug? Right.
The Jitterbug.
Jitterbug. Yeah.
That's it. And she was so insulted. I said, well, how about a Galaxy Note 3, I think it was. And she loved it because she had a stylus so she could draw on it. And now she's got an iPhone 6S Plus. Loves it. Loves it. I think she feels like it's a way of staying connected with me to have a lot of technology. Because, you know, then she can call me and say, well, I can't. Can you help me? And then we get to talk. So.
Wow.
But
I'm
think
off
it's,
the gadget freak.
Yeah, see? I don't think it hasn't... Jeff has an article. This is what happened. It's not quite an article. This is where Everybody Loves Raymond. Is that what this is from?
No, this should be. No. I put Seinfeld in.
Right. Oh, is it Seinfeld?
Listen, I wanted to talk to you about Deborah's birthday.
My God, talk about birthdays. Your birthday gift to me finally came this morning. And did you know you sent me a box of pears?
Yeah.
From a place called Fruit of the Month?
That's right. How are they?
Oh, they're very nice pears. But there's so many of them. There are over a dozen pears. What am I supposed to do with all those pears?
Well, I think you're supposed to eat them.
Myself?
You and Dad and Robert.
How many pears can Robert eat? Look, I appreciate the thought, Raymond, but please don't ever send us any more food again, okay?
That's what happens when I give my parents technology. Don't ever do that again.
That's the pilot for Everybody Loves Raymond, I'm told. Nougat!
Oh.
Triggering an avalanche of searches for what the hell is nougat.
Yeah.
On Google. Android N is going to be nougat. That was kind of what I thought it would be all along. I'm glad it wasn't a brand name.
But it was kind of ridiculous to make this whole hoo-ha over
Well, especially Hiroshi Lockheimer saying, I'm not telling you, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and it wasn't going to be anything with nut.
You know, maybe they could have gotten something really creative, but no.
I like nougat. What's wrong with nougat? See, this is the mistake of doing what they did, which is making this big deal about it, and just instead of saying it's going to be Android N is nougat. I mean, do you think that they got a lot of people contributing suggestions and, pored over those suggestions, trying to figure out what the best one? They knew it was going to be nougat all along. Come on.
I think it would have been nice to have a little bit of diversity in this and pick something from some other nation other than the U.S.
Well, this is from a nation other than the U.S.
Do they call it a nougat there?
Oh, my God. Nougat's huge. Nougat is French and Italian.
Call it nougat in
those
places?
Well, they call it torrone.
Well, you see, that's my issue.
In Italy. They do call it nougat in French.
Well, they do. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
German is nougat.
Okay, then I take it back.
No. In fact, I remember when I was a kid in 1967, we went to Europe, and there was a town, I can't remember what the town was famous for nougat in France. And nougat was everywhere. They had nougat in the gas station. Nougat was everywhere.
It is a European thing.
I think it's European. I think this is very international.
Right. Well, it's at least European.
Sugar, honey, nuts, almond, walnut, pistachio, hazelnuts, your choice. Egg whites. Sometimes there's candied fruit in there.
And then the fruitcake of candies.
Oh, no, yeah. It's good. You don't love nougat? Have you had
nougat? I'm not a nougat fan.
Oh, yeah.
No. Torrone is great. We used to, in fact, the local bodega when I was growing up had Torrone, and we'd go in there and get a Torrone, the Italian nougat.
Yuck. So then can we start speculating about O?
good question, Stacey. What do you think?
Because O is next.
Oreo.
Oreo. No, see, brand name. I think they learned from the
Kit Kat.
Kit Kat that was.
But Oreo, isn't Oreo special?
Isn't it special how?
It's just an institution. Are you sure?
It's a wafer and.
It's special.
It's special, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Nilla vanilla wafers would have been special too, but no.
Nilla wafers are not a dessert. We have this argument in my
house. It's a cookie. What the hell is it?
It's a. I maintain that it is a cracker.
No, you're wrong.
No, it's
no, you're wrong. It's a dessert.
This is
a cracker.
Daughter's lunch with her school. He doesn't let her have desserts.
Wait a minute.
They're a cracker.
She goes to a school that mandates that the lunch brought from home may not have a dessert in it.
They can't have like cookies and sweets. They encourage us not to bring them. I know.
Aren't you? You're not in Texas. You're in San Francisco. In Texas, states' rights would say no.
What the what?
Again, yeah. I live in Austin. It's like the Berkeley of Texas.
Is it public school?
No, it's a private school.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Is it like one of them Waldorf schools that can't watch TV or
no,
nothing?
No. It's an international school.
Oh, it's international. So at least they say it with a charming French accent.
That means students come from Austin and Houston.
You may not bring any dessert to school. Paella, of course, but no dessert.
I'm concerned about your accent there.
I don't know what it is. Jeez.
Like, it's definitely foreign.
It's foreign. That's all that matters. It doesn't really matter what. In fact, it's better if it's not definable in nationality. It's just a generic foreign accent. I do a lot of them. Jeez. In Malta, nougat is known as kubajd and sold in village festivals. In Greece, it's known as mandolato. Sicilian nougat is kubaita, kupetta, or tarone.
You've now passed the line that I know way too much about nougat.
But nougat is a traditional French candy.
Okay, all right. So it's a sop to the French.
Largely associated with the Christmas season. Nougat. That is not news. That's just a story. There's nothing much to say except that now we know.
You know about nougat.
They got us to do it. They got us to talk about it.
Yeah.
Used again.
Google expands its ad tracking. Of course, depends which article you read. 9 to 5, yeah. Google celebrated that it was opt-in. Wired magazine said, uh-oh. Google expands its ad tracking, but yay, it's opt-in. In fact, there's a new tool that you can use to change this. It's My Activity, a page that bundles search history, videos you've watched, pages you've visited that serve Google ads. There's a setting there. If you opt into the setting, always when you visited Google pages, Google included what it knows about you from search into the recommendations. But they didn't. I did not know this, but they didn't apparently do that when you see Google AdWords on other pages, third-party pages.
I'm surprised there hasn't been a furor over this. I mean, it is good. It's transparent. I think it's great. But people say, oh, my God, look at all they know about me. Yes, because it's just very explicit. This is what you did, and you can erase it, and there it is. I think it's great. But I'm waiting for the privacy panic to ensue.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, they've been super proactive with the opt-in, with the transparency. This is kind of exactly what a lot of the privacy people are calling for. So
I agree.
What would they complain about?
Well, because I think that some idiots will come along and say, oh, my God, look what's there.
Oh, well, I mean,
there was a
the same thing happened when people discovered Google Dashboard, right?
Yeah.
Look at all the things they know about me.
You're absolutely right, Stacey. This is exactly what they should do. I completely agree. But privacy panic is idiocy. I put up a story somewhere in here under Facebook of some stunt where you go into a Starbucks, you get a free coffee if you like the page, you tell them your first name, and oh my God, look at all they know about you. Yeah, it's on your public Facebook page. What's the big deal? But we can make a panic out of anything.
So you go to myactivity.google.com. Here it is. Welcome to My Activity.
We're going to see what Leo's done, aren't we?
Oh, God. Oh. Well, apparently I searched for nougat. this is interesting the way they've spin this. Rediscover the things you've searched for, visited, and watched on Google services. You're going to rediscover those. And page 2, we put data to work for you. Your activity helps make Google experience faster, smarter, and more useful. So what could be wrong with that? And page 3, you're in control. You can easily delete specific items or entire topics. You can also change your settings and decide which data gets associated with your account. So this is kind of like the dashboard.
But very detailed.
It is. Oh, man. Oh, I thought it was going to give me a time frame for how many quirky videos I have consumed.
Wouldn't that be great?
It just says 8 of them.
You've watched 8 corgi. Do you have corgis?
No, I
they
have
a corgi mix. They are cute. When they wag their little tails and their butt wags with it because there's so stunted and deformed. It's so adorable.
Yes, my daughter loves them. So.
No, I do too, actually. My sister has 2 of them.
Oh.
So I visited. So it's up to date because it's showing that I visited Rideshare and Fasten Rideshare and com.android.yada.yada.yada. What's that? I don't, I've gone there 3 times. This is the kind of thing you'd want to explore. Like, what is that? It's something obviously that happened on my smartphone. Journal 2 times, Android calendar. I'm kind of nervous about how deep I should go into my search history here. So
but you can also show how you can erase one.
Okay.
Under the 3 dots.
So here's the 3 dots. I've been searching for free BSD workstations.
Details.
Details will show me like all of the searches. Okay. Hmm. And then that gets pretty right. It gets granular. So I could say, well, you know, this one where I typed workstations without an O, let's delete that one. Not that that will make any difference. Interesting.
Right. Huh. So I when I played with it, there was something I'd searched for a gift. I wanted to think that I wanted this. Yeah, I could think it out. Nobody's going to go to the trouble.
Oh, yeah. Like your Amazon recommendations. All I'm seeing on mine is YouTube stuff, which is... I feel like
did you,
I went through.
What account?
my...
Is this the main account you usually use?
It is. Let's see what happens when I go to my other account. One is work and one is... But I, you know, it's Google. It intermingles.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Well, okay, it doesn't. You're right. Sorry.
Much to Jeff's chagrin.
Much to my chagrin. No, don't get me started.
Don't get me started.
Niagara Falls.
He wants it to, he wants it to bundle it. So
it okay, is. Yeah, now.
So some activity manager. So 35 items, Android search now, video search, YouTube, voice and audio. So those are the kinds of searches it's showing. And then you could delete any search. And if you want more details, you can see what devices you used, why this was saved. And this is basically going to be for ad recommendations, yes or no?
I mean, yeah, what? I think so. What also Google yes. Now?
Right.
Google Now.
Right.
It'll also possibly feed into their machine learning stuff. I mean, you could use it to make recommendations later on based on a person's individual habits. Like Google Now could say, hey, she really likes corgis.
I wish it would tell me what com.android.yada.yada is. I seem to spend a lot of time there. That is really interesting.
Can you click on it and see without us knowing?
Details. What, you think it's dirty? No, it's,
no, I don't. I just like...
No, I can, you, this is all I can get is what time... it doesn't even say which Android device.
App Store for... Is it an App Store for Android?
Oh, it's the App Store. Well, they should have a better name than that.
No, it's a game on the App Store.
Oh, it is? Oh.
I'm just looking up com.google.yadayada.
Huh.
On Google.
Uh-huh. Huh. Interesting. It's cool. It tells you what videos you watch. Yeah, so on Sunday we watched... some videos from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, and it's showing me I saw those.
There's all Android L yada yada dot APK.
And I don't think I'll have to look and see. So you know what? This is kind of like your browser history, but it's not kept in the browser. It's kept elsewhere, right? So... That could bother people, especially now that we know law enforcement is allowed to look at your browser history without a warrant. This simplifies things for them because they don't have to ask me for my browser history or come to look at my computer. They can just go to Google and say, all right. Now, I use Chrome. I don't know. If you go into a Google site, it should know that.
If I visited YouTube from somewhere else, it would see it.
Yeah. Okay. Huh. Boy, it goes down. It's day by day. So you can see how many videos you watched on any given day.
And it's across all your devices?
Yeah, apparently.
By that account. Okay.
Android search. But it's Google services. This is interesting. So where is the part where I can opt out? That's what I need to find.
Well, don't you have to... You opt into using this for ads.
Here we go.
Opposed to opting out.
Right. Activity controls. From better commute options and maps to quicker results in search, the data we save with your account. So here we go. Include Chrome browsing history and activity from websites and apps that use Google services. That's checked. Location history. Device information. That's a switch I can turn off. Voice and audio activity. This is one thing that does bother people, the fact that it has all of the voice, all of the things you say after you say, okay, Google.
Right. That was a big deal a couple days ago, weeks ago.
Really? So funny.
Yeah, people got upset because not only does it record it, they store it, and everyone was like, Google can hear all of my voice texts.
Yes. What did you think when you said, okay, Google?
Well, that's what I'm like. I'm like, oh.
You think so, but Apple's making a big deal about, oh, we'll do this on device. It won't get sent back to the server, except Siri will. And the difference is Apple doesn't tell you all the things Siri heard.
Right.
At least Google's exposing that.
And that's how Google gets better at understanding a mm-hmm. variety of voices and everything mm-hmm. else. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, the fact that they save it. Yeah, I doubt Apple. Well, I don't know. Maybe we don't know. Apple doesn't say whether they save your Siri queries or not. I don't know. YouTube watches. So I'm not sure. You can turn. I don't see the thing where you opt in, the new thing. But maybe I'm just not looking in the right place. As is often the case with privacy controls, there's on the one hand, you want granularity, but on the other hand,
nobody's going to do it.
It's so granular that you don't even know what you're looking at.
So. It does provide cover for them. Yeah. Hey, you want to know what we're doing? Yeah. Here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, if you have to opt in, it should be whatever's turned off there, right?
I mean, yeah, but everything's on, so.
So.
I don't know what they're talking about. What are you talking about? They do say here, we are committed to your privacy and security. And look at the people have little blue shields they're hiding behind.
They're hiding their data behind?
Yes. You do not know who I am. Because Google is hiding. You do have to log into your account, obviously. Every day, data makes our... See, she removed the blue shield. And now
look how happy she is.
Happy.
Oh, my web and app activity is paused. So mine was already off.
Ah.
My activities controls. But I'm a pretty vigorous...
Somebody in the chat room is saying, it's in your security checkup, which I do. Yeah, you know, every once in a while, Google say, you really ought to be doing your Google security checkup. And so let me run through that here. This is the
Google. Oh, okay. So that's why I couldn't see anything but YouTube is because mine was already turned off.
There you go. It's by default, okay. I guess, unless you'd turned it off.
I probably have turned it off, but I don't know if this is new or not.
Time for your security checkup. Okay. And then here is your connected devices. Those you might want to look through. Looks good. Or something looks wrong. Okay. And then check your account permissions. Those are the things when you log into a Google account in a browser and it says, okay, remember this. And that's the name you gave it. There's quite a few of those. Check your app passwords. Okay. Check your two-step verification settings. Okay. I didn't get it.
Maybe you should just turn yours off and then you'll stop seeing it.
But I thought they said it was opt-in, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it may be that it's not turned. Oh, is it privacy checkup? Is that the one I need to do? Privacy checkup. Sorry. Again, with the granularity, more privacy. Okay, and then this is your Google Plus profile. Weird. Okay, next.
Ooh.
How people connect with you. Those are all my phone numbers. Next. Choose who could see my location and how well they could see it. Manage what you share on YouTube.
Jeebus.
Privacy. Manage your Google Photos. I probably have everything set to, like, just, you know, tell them every... Ah, here we go. Make ads more relevant to you. Manage your ad settings. Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Oh, I've been here once before. Because it always thinks I'm a guy who... It used to think I was a guy, like a really old guy.
What?
Because I read about tech, and most of my websites that I visit skew male.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Or they thought only old men like corgis.
Right, right. That's a common thing.
Wait a minute. That's okay. See, the ads based on your interests. Okay. With it on, this is what you get. With it off, you're still going to see ads. That's important. But they won't be based on anything they know about you, which I see. This is the thing that I always it's my assertion that if ad recommendation engines worked better, people would like the ads based on your interests turned on.
Well, that depends upon the ads that they have to serve and how messed up they are.
Well, that's true, too.
And the stupidity of the ads, too. The problem with retargeting when you've already bought the damn boots you looked at Amazon 2 weeks ago and they keep on selling you the damn boots.
Well, let me ask you guys.
Right.
Because I've been seeing, and I'm not sure if this is advertising or just Google trying to be helpful, but whenever I've been searching for a computer bag and Google is like, on Google now, it'll be like, hey, continue researching handbags, et cetera. But now it's also telling me, hey, this particular bag you looked at is now on sale at 33% off, which is the lowest price we've seen. And then, like, the other day that happened to me, and I was like, oh, that's my bag that I've been looking for. So I bought it. And I was like, that was really helpful to me. But I'm curious if that was Google showing me, was that a quote-unquote ad, or was that just Google now getting... aggressive?
Was there an action you could take? Like,
yes, I clicked on I clicked on the little Google Now card, and it took me to Saks to buy.
That's interesting. That's a really, because up to now, I don't think anybody's ever said that Google Now had ads in it.
Well, and I that's what I because I
that's
it didn't
really
feel
interesting.
Like it, had. It felt like
it's helpful,
really nice,
helpful. Like a yes, friend I would do that.
I purchased something from it, so I'm like, hmm. And I would never have known because. Oh.
What did you say? Did you say? What did you say?
Who?
You.
Who?
Oh. No, I started. I was changing something. Speaking of which, did you see the shared?
I thought you said "son of a bitch." I'm sorry.
No.
Oh. I should have done that while you were drinking. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Speaking of which,
you talking to me?
You what? What did you say? Did I hear what I thought I heard you say? Go ahead.
Did you see the shared endorsement setting?
No, I did see it, but I went right by it. What is that?
Go back to the activity controls under my activity. Go to shared endorsements.
Okay.
Facebook got in trouble for this once upon a time.
This I don't like, where this says, you liked this, so I'm going to show Jeff Jarvis, because you're his friend, that you liked it.
Right. And you can appear in ads. So this is your place where you can turn that off. That's the one thing I would turn off. Just don't put my name in an ad.
I didn't know Google was doing that.
I didn't either. So go to that. Are you there? Are you there yet?
It takes me a while. I got to go. I can't even remember where it was.
So I'd go back to myactivity.google.com.
Yeah.
Go to the activities.
Activity controls, yeah.
I'll go to the bottom of the page.
Besides
Google Plus, oh, remember that? It says shared endorsements.
Shared endorsements?
So Google now it says...
I don't mind that.
Well, now go down.
This isn't as bad as the way
shared
Facebook was
in
doing
ads. In ads, and you can turn that off.
But if you're looking at summertime spas and your friend Katya Klinikova says it's a nice spa, you would like to know that, wouldn't you? In her Yelp review?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess if you're recommending, you are recommending to the public.
Yeah, this is finding your review somewhere.
All right.
I don't know if I'd mind that.
All right, son of a bitch.
By the way, it's off by default because mine's not checked. Based upon my activity, Google may show my name and profile photo and shared endorsements that appear in ads. Mine is, and I've never seen this before. I don't think I've turned it off. Mine was unchecked.
Oh, people would be livid if that happened. Imagine if you had a sponsorship deal with Nike, but you...
Right, it could cost me money. Yeah, that's a good point. If you're under 18, you may see shared endorsements from others, but your own name and profile will not be paired with shared endorsements in ads and other contexts. So, yeah.
On the ad settings, it says that it knows that I'm male. Age, it says question mark, and it gives me no chance to tell them how old I am.
That's funny. Wouldn't you want to have that? Yeah. That was a Google Plus setting, it looked like. It was because when I went... It's related to Google Plus.
Oh, well.
All right. There you go. That's the everything you ever want to know about Google ad tracking, but we're afraid to ask. Rumor persists that Google is going to do not a new Nexus, but it kind of its own phone. I'm not sure exactly how that differs. The Nexus is devices have all along been built by other companies, LG and Huawei, did the Nexus 5.
I think the last time the Telegraph had a prediction, it was all messed up.
This is wrong, maybe. Yeah, James Titcomb says Google's planning a shakeup of the smartphone market by releasing its own handset. Now, there are some arguments for this. I can see why Google might want to do that. We have even seen leaked shots of the new Nexus phone. I think Ron Amadio and Ars Technica had some leaked shots. Mm-hmm. Google, wants to control its own destiny a little bit, I think, right? And if it does its own phone, from a security point of view...
Its own phone and having a Nexus phone.
That's a little unclear in my mind.
Apple has the manufacturing done by another company. What's the big deal?
Yeah, they would... Obviously, Google's not going to have a factory in Mountain View.
No.
But in the past, it sounds like it's a little bit of a looser connection, like LG with the 5X or Huawei with the 6P. Google would say, we would like to design it like this. But those are very different-looking phones. I mean, the 6P very much looks like a Huawei phone, and the 5X very much looks like an LG phone. So
is it, does Google give them specs and have them let them source the hardware? And this could be a way for them to control specifically what chips and firmware and everything else on the device?
Possibly. I get the feeling that Google lets these companies design it themselves. That's why the distinctive design.
So
I think this would give Google 100% design control.
Because they've been working with a chip company called Movidius to put the embedded vision in their phones, and as you start working towards VR,
there you
that
go.
Could be.
Well, and clearly Google has some influence because the most recent Nexus phones have the fingerprint reader on the back. That's a kind of unique to both of them, and that's a Google thing. But on the other hand, they have other things that look more like Huawei or more like LG. This is the Ron Armadio article on the 2016. Now, he still calls it a Nexus. Kind of two-tone. We're not sure if that's shiny plastic, but people seem to think it's glass up top so that the radios can get through and the camera can get through. Notice no camera bump, which people are applauding. Android Police has created a render. So this is a render from the Android Police based on the leaks. 5-inch device called Sailfish. 5.5-inch device called Marlin. Ron
this
notes.
Is saying,
go ahead.
Oh, this is saying HTC is going to design it?
Yeah, but it doesn't have an HTC logo on it.
Okay, because I loved HTC Sense.
It would definitely not have Sense.
It would not have Sense.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that's not going to happen. Do you have an HTC 10? Is that your current?
No. I've got a Nexus 5X, but I had an HTC. I miss it still. I really like the Sense UI.
Yeah, I thought Sense was pretty nice.
And I like the Moto. In the Moto X, you know, they had the shake to do the flashlight on.
Those are all things you're not going to see, I think, in a Google phone.
I know. I'm like, I want to design my own phone with all my favorite features from phones.
I'm really loving the OnePlus 3. The more I use it, the more I feel like this is the phone, especially at that price. And I'm not even price sensitive because I have to buy them all no matter what. But boy, it's easy for me to recommend this to anybody who's spending their own money.
What's your favorite bit of it?
Well, it's very pure, clean Android phone that's very fast, has an excellent camera. I like a metal body. It's got an HTC style aluminum body. I would not recommend the plasticky shells. I bought one and I thought this is terrible. I don't use it. People were complaining about the screen. It's an LCD screen, but it's very good. I don't think it lacks anything compared to my Galaxy S7.
It's M equivalent.
It's what equivalent?
M equivalent.
Yeah, it's their OS, which is Oxygen, which is, as far as I could tell, virtually indistinguishable from Android 6. It even says Android 6. In fact, there's a new update that's just coming out right now. I haven't got it yet. It's Android 6.0.1. There was some question about whether they were going to keep up with the security patches. Mine is currently security patched through June 1st, which is pretty common. I mean, if I get the July security patch, then that will reassure me. That'll let me know that OnePlus plans to keep it up. There's no reason not to recommend this phone at $400.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me know if you get your security patch, and then I might go get it.
I will. I for sure will. I can't. There's no reason why they wouldn't do it, especially since Oxygen is such a pure version of Android. 6 gigs of RAM, and apparently one of the things the patch does is allow full use of that. It doesn't right now use it or seem to use it. I think this is nice.
When is N supposed to be released?
Fall. Probably with these new Nexuses.
Nexi.
Is it Latin? I guess it is.
I'm a product of the Texas Public School Board. I don't know.
But hey, on the bright side. You got dessert in your lunch.
What do you think about evolution there, Stacey?
What?
So you grew up? Did you grow up in Texas? You're a Texan.
I'm a straight up Texan.
Nice.
I even moved to New York and moved back.
Yeah, because those New Yorkers, they got New York values, if you know what I mean.
No, I was just.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we know. We know what you mean. Our show today brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stacy knows all about these. But you never did install one. You had a different company's.
I did install the Ring. I didn't do the Ring Pro.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Ring Pro, so the Ring Pro is cool because it's essentially the same as the Ring, but if you already have a wired doorbell, you don't need the battery that's in the original Ring, which makes it compatible in any environment. You could put it on a bedroom door, which is what I was thinking. What this does is replaces your existing door. Huh?
Wait, you're going to put it on your bedroom door? Like,
Who's honey, there?
Knock before coming in?
Yeah. Ring the doorbell, kids. Mommy and daddy are having nap time. And that way you can see who's at your door. We have it on our front door, but I can think of all sorts of applications. Actually, one of the things I want to do is put it in the back door, too. But now they've got the Ring, what do they call it? The stick-up cam, which is kind of a weird name. But
I thought so, too. I was like, it's like the stick-em-up cam?
Not the stick-em-up, but it's stick-up. Because the reason is it doesn't need any wires. In fact, if you get the solar panel, doesn't need power even. And it has not the same camera, but also a speaker and a microphone. So you can talk to people in the backyard or wherever else. So this way you get full coverage. You get the front door with a Ring Video Doorbell. You get the back door with a stick-up cam. And with their chime, you're never going to miss a doorbell ringing ever again. They have optional cloud video recording for all their devices, which means you can capture and share video with family and friends or law enforcement. There's a robotic dog at my door. I love this. I tell you what, I was mentioning this earlier. The UPS guys have just decided in our neighborhood to stop leaving packages on the porch because they say there's too many robberies. I guess there's been a slew of robberies. But that's okay because I got the Ring Video Doorbell. So if they left it on the porch, I could monitor it. But better yet, when he comes to the door and I'm not there, and that what they were doing is just leaving is and taking the package with him and saying you can get it at the UPS store. So now what I do is say, no, I'm in here. Just leave it there. I'll be right out. Or put it in the bushes. It'll be safe. Whatever. But I don't miss packages anymore. And I can keep an eye on them. It is a great, great idea. The Ring Video Doorbell. We've got a kind of a bundle here for you. The Ring of Security Bundle Kit. Or the Pro Bundle Kit if you don't need the battery. But both kits come with the stick-up cam, the solar panel, the chime. So you get everything you need. They call it their Ring of Security Bundle. $50 off when you go to ring.com/twig. ring.com/twig. $50 off for a limited time for This Week in Google listeners. This is the one that Richard Branson led a $28 million investment into Ring. Because he must have known not just about the doorbell. He must have known about the other stuff they were doing, like the stick-up cam.
There's a cool story. So Jamie, the CEO of Ring, actually met Richard Branson like several years before he had the doorbell company.
Yeah, because Jamie pitched it in the Shark Tank, or pitched something in Shark Tank, right?
He did. This is a Shark Tank thing. But Jamie pitched before he was even at Ring, when he was like a 20-something-year-old baby entrepreneur, he ran into Richard Branson in a hotel in like Germany or some crazy place and was like, oh my God, you're my hero. You're great. And Richard Branson was like, hey, you know, send a note to my room. And, you know, I'd love to talk to you when I get back It was a total missed connection. So Jamie was telling me about this when they got the funding from Richard Branson.
That's so cool.
I was like, yeah.
Google Chrome now comes with Google Casting baked right in. That says of 51.
Makes sense at last. I wasn't this done ages ago.
Wow. Right. Crazy. Did you? It's Chrome 52. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. It is 51. Chrome 52, which is already on the horizon, it's in the beta channel. Looks like you'll be able to cast a tab into a video hangout, which would be really cool. Here's what I'm watching. Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
That would be it.
You'll have to enable cloud services first. Cloud services allow you to share the contents of your browser tab of your desktop with other users through services like Google Hangouts, but you must sign into Chrome and turn that option on. Nice. So, Chromecast, I think Chromecast is awesome. I don't have much else to say about it. Hmm.
So do we want to talk about...
Yes, will we? Something, anything.
Anything.
What, anything. I feel at a loss.
You want to talk about the Wi-Fi kiosks from Sidewalk Labs and sensors?
Shoot, yes. What is it?
Because, well, okay, so this was from Recode and a bunch of other stories this last week because Alphabet's company, Sidewalk Labs, is putting in or applied to put in smart city infrastructure in Columbus, Ohio.
This is not like the ones in New York, though.
Well, so it is. So that's...
Those are cool.
Part of a consortium that... backed a company that put those in. It's really complicated.
Okay.
Yeah. Enjoy
so
that.
So they've got 100... Have you used these yet, Jeff? They have 134 Link NYC kiosks.
I did a speed test on it. It was very good. I can't remember what it was. But again, you're standing on the street corner with your phone out. It's...
Are they old public phone booths? Is that what they're converting?
No, not the booths. They're the old connectivity to them. But they had to rerun fiber and all kinds of stuff to them. So they're basically the hole in the sidewalk where they can put them.
The hundreds more are on the way this summer, and they plan to have 7,000 to 10,000 in the next 5 years. No, I'm sorry, 5 years. They're going to 2024 in the next 7 years. They weren't wired up when I was in New York last, but I did go over
on 8th Avenue, for example. Now they're working.
Yeah.
They have a keyboard, but can you imagine this is going to be the scuzziest keyboard you'd ever want to not touch?
Yeah. That's the knuckle typing. But what's cool about them is the sensors. So the New York ones don't have the sensors. They have the cameras in them, but people were like, oh, no, do not record me on the public street, which I totally get. But the new ones they're pitching have like air quality sensors. They have vibration sensors. They have a bunch of sensors. And so I'm really keen on the idea of adding all this like super granular data about, again, air quality and things cities want to know. And I actually saw this demo of vibration sensors on a streetlight from Busan in South Korea. And they actually had it so if someone hit the streetlight, it would send a vibration signal and a camera would turn on and it would show like if someone was injured or hurt. So it was kind of like instead of like those police call boxes, you could just hit a piece of street furniture.
These have big 911 emergency buttons on them. What I didn't know is it also gives you free calling to any number in the country.
Oh.
So it's a phone booth with free long distance.
You got to touch that keyboard.
That's pretty cool. Two USB charging ports in case you want to just hang out. An audio jack for headphones. And unlimited. They were saying gigabit. I don't know if it is gigabit internet. Very fast internet.
So somebody's going to stand there and watch a movie with the headphones on?
And charge their smartphone.
By the way, if you're going to make a phone call, then it's going to be everybody's going to hear your call, right?
Well, you put on your headphones.
What about all the people who, it's a scam, but there are also legitimate people who are like, my phone's out of battery.
Right.
Can I use your phone to make a call? And you're like, you have to make the...
Go use a kiosk, buddy.
Yeah. Exactly. Now you can be a jerk without being a jerk.
And I remember looking into the security they're using, and it's actually, no, I'm not Steve Gibson, but it looked to me to be very good. When you first join it, it sends you a token that you use to join it that makes your connection unique. Now, nobody can spy on your connection. You have a token that you're sharing.
So like no man in the middle attacks?
Well, that was the design. Again, I'm not a Steve Gibson, and I'm sure... I'm willing to venture these are going to be the most hacked, or people will attempt to hack these quite a bit, given the capabilities.
So the reason I thought this was interesting is because at the bottom of the Recode story, they talk about this being a hard sell. And I met with the CIO of the city of Chicago, and we actually started talking about kiosks. And she is totally not sold on them because they feel like a very temporary, like 2 or 3 year solution. And they're concerned about, vandalism and having all this infrastructure to maintain. And so I was just kind of curious y'all's thoughts about kiosks. And is really that the way that we want to usher in the 21st century?
Well, I'm going to defer to Jeff because he's a New Yorker here.
The thing that gets me, Philadelphia, you remember back about, 6 years, 7 years, Philadelphia was going to do major Wi-Fi around the whole city.
Yeah, Comcast and Verizon went to the state legislature and gave them a bunch of money and said, can you overturn, can you make a rule against that?
Right. And it was going to power communications and emergency vehicles.
It's amazing.
The thing about it is that if you want to bring people online, let's say in a poor neighborhood, doing it on the street doesn't really do them any good. You got to do it somehow into their home.
Right.
And
I think this is not such an altruistic venture. As the Recode article points out, they estimate each kiosk will generate $30,000 in advertising revenue.
Yes, that's if the city opts into it, though. And that's another reason why I think these are kind of a weird... Is it basically like a billboard that has extra sensors at high level?
I love the sensors. I mean, not only can they monitor air quality, but they can monitor street noise. You can see how much bike and car traffic is, pedestrian traffic. I mean, I don't think that's an intrusion. I think that that's potentially very useful for the city, right?
I wrote about, I did a story on Medium, Are We Ready for Naked Transparency? And this was, again, from Busan. They actually measured on streetlights noise pollution, and they made the data very open. And apparently all the people who had property in noisy districts complained because they were like, it was lowering their property value.
We can't sell our house. Oh, too bad. Oh,
that was my reaction. But the city actually decided that they needed to make that data harder to get to. And so they changed the data formatting so these people would feel better. Oh, there's the streetlight. See, if you hit it, it will send a message to police.
That's really interesting.
So I just thought that was really kind of fun because, you know, I can see my neighborhood being like, oh, my God. We're too noisy, or there's too many coyotes being tracked. No one will want to live here anymore.
Well, but sorry, but that's fact. That's factual. Right. So I really don't. I think if it's factual and it's city owned information, that I think the public has a right to know that.
Yeah, it's we have a right to that. I mean, I wish there's all kinds of terrorist related air sensors in subways in New York. I wish that data were public. Maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't seen any of that.
You know what?
Yeah, it's data. It's public. This is my. Yeah. This is my. As long as it's occurring in the public owns it,
and the public's paying for it.
Yeah,
I think you could make a case though. There's some things like information about terrorist activity that need to be kept secret for security reasons.
Well, but I think cameras. I mean, listen. If you look at some of the the horrible Turkey, the horrendous tragedy at the Turkish airport in Istanbul. The security cameras, the fact that there are security cameras and you can see the people, that matters to our security. I'm okay with that. Around New York, there are amazing systems that if a bullet goes off, the police can zoom in on it right away. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. It's public. It's in the public. And if you do something in the public has the right to know it.
I think the ShotSpotter, I don't know if they're using ShotSpotter, which is the gunshot they've got sensors measuring gunshot, and they tell police where the gunshot.
They triangulate it. Yeah.
Thank you. That data isn't always available because that's one of the things the Chicago CIO was telling me is they don't have access to some of that data. Only the police department gets it.
Not necessarily. I mean, I can understand making an argument that that's not a good idea. There's some stuff for you can make reasonable security purposes should be kept. Maybe after the fact, later, or something, right?
Yeah. I mean, the point is, once we start having this information, it's going to change a lot of things. And the question is, does it change things for the better? Like, it promotes action? Like, everyone's like, oh, look, the air is really polluted over in our poorest, saddest district. Maybe we should do something about that. Or is it just going to create a bigger divide?
You also asked
an argument, Stacey. My argument, Stacey, is that we should never try to control knowledge. That more information and more knowledge is we should assume is a good thing.
But you have to balance that with privacy and security.
What you do with that knowledge is a different matter.
Yeah.
But to control the knowing of something is antithetical to a modern society.
Again, balancing with privacy concerns of individuals.
That's the issue of what you do with it, right?
And security. So if you have bomb sniffing sensors in the subway, you may not want everybody to know that. If you know, you know, something about individuals, you may want, you know, if you have a kiosk out front of an adult theater, you don't want to necessarily publish the video of everybody going into the adult theater. Or maybe you do. I don't know. I feel now like you should.
Now they can just watch the porn on the kiosk. Nobody outside.
Yeah. Fine. What a moron. Why are you going to adult theater?
Yeah.
Come on.
Don't you know? Sticky.
I feel like this is very Blade Runner, the idea of these kiosks.
You see, but that's an emotional, creepy argument.
No, I like it. I mean, I just
read.
It's emotional, but it's I like it.
Yeah. I like it. Farhad Manjoo just wrote a piece in the Times today that just had me gritting my teeth.
He's becoming quite the Luddite.
Oh, well, so is my good friends at The Guardian. I got to say, at The Times, all the major publications are it's now the vogue to be against technology. So in recognition of Alvin Toffler's death, we need futurists because the future is coming too fast. Who says? It's not coming fast enough, man.
Yeah, let's get that future here now.
Yeah, let's cure a few more diseases. Let's spread more information. Let's educate more people. Let's connect more of the world. Jeez. And just, oh, the future is bad. Let's make America great again. That's what that means.
Yeah.
Don't email me.
How much does, as a professor of journalism, I'm asking you, how much does the public zeitgeist inform what the journalist is writing about? Does Farhad
yes, I think
influenced by that?
Very good point. Sure. I think that at a cynical level, Leo, I have seen publications, you know, news organizations now, that at a very literal level watch trends and then go and rewrite articles based on all those trends things so they can grab some.
That's demand media. That's just a
right, exactly. Well, that's happening all over in ways that are more subtle now.
That's what worries me, is the more subtle thing where you let I guess it's always the case. So right, you're in a business, you're trying to generate traffic and views or.
And you also get feedback loops of another sort, right? You know, you write a Luddite piece like that. You write a technopanic piece like that. And I guarantee there'll be lots of tweets and emails saying, yeah, good. And then you can say, well, this is what the public wants. It's right. Look at all the reaction I got.
I guess, look, it's true. It's obvious. And I've been in media long enough to know that there's certainly a great temptation to do that. I always argue against doing it because I feel like it's the tail wagging the dog.
It's boring, too. It's what people
It's boring because it becomes uniform. Yeah. It's just telling people what they already think. Yeah. In some ways, don't you want media that challenges your beliefs? And well, maybe
no.
Not.
No one reads that.
No one wants that.
I'm serious. Like, no one wants. They want something that will either validate their thinking.
Yeah, no, you're right.
In many cases. I shouldn't say everything.
No, I subscribe to magazines of political thought that are completely opposite of mine, because I want to be challenged. I don't want to just. Sometimes it makes me mad, but that's good.
I was with my parents the last 2 days and helping them pack and do all kinds of things. And plus they watch Fox News, so we don't want the TV on at all.
Right.
So there's no TV news, nothing. We're busy for 3 days. I did really enjoy the respite.
Well, this is a bad year for politics, so I don't blame you. Our 13-year-old just goes no 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 no. He does not want to. He doesn't want to hear the word Trump. He doesn't want to hear the word Clinton. He just no 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 no. And I could completely understand that. It's kind of, it becomes overloaded. I'm a political junkie though. I love these conversations. I really love the. You know, a lot of times we'll have people on Triangulation I disagree with, and I love the conversation because I want to hear the other people's points of view.
I do too, but
yeah, but we're the few, I guess.
Maybe it's an American thing. I've got a friend of mine from Germany. We go out sometimes, and he's like, every time the conversation gets interesting, everyone skirts away from
right.
it and talks about something else. And I'm
politics,
like,
religion, sex. Those are the three most interesting things you can talk about. But it's
I was talking to a professor at MIT, and they're looking to do a conference, I'm not sure when, on what you can't talk about.
Oh, I love that. What a great conference.
It is a great, great idea. Yeah. And let's talk about what we can't talk about and what's the impact of that in discussion and in the academe and in politics.
Somebody in the chat room says, I want to construct a belief system that's robust enough to face its critics. I like that. and maybe modify it. If yeah.
You can't back down on the internet. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. When I find myself kind of knee jerk reacting to something, I take note and say, wait a minute.
Well, you also you this is part of what drives some of your fans crazy. They don't see when you are doing the contrarian piece to have a better discussion.
Yeah, partly that's because I'm capable of seeing also many sides to an argument, I think.
But you also do it for the sake of the show.
Well, I do it for the sake of the show, but it's also kind of my bet. I mean, to a fault. If you say, you know, I'm a murderer, I would say, well, you know, there may be some justification for that, you know, and I don't know why, but that just to a fault,
But it's a unique property. Not only do you see it, but you're not afraid to argue the devil's advocate position.
No,
on the show,
but I can do it with shows. I can do it
with at least empathy.
With some real empathy for that position.
Yeah, yeah, and you do a very good job of that, and that's what makes the shows special, I think.
Yeah.
But some, you know, so you and I will go at it sometimes, and I know what you're doing, so we'll both play our parts.
Yeah,
and
you'll have to learn this too, Stacey, that sometimes I might say something that you think reprehensible.
Oh, I would just tell you.
Basically, Stacey, just blame it on that every time he does it. Oh, that was just like, Leo.
And you will never know if I believe it or not, right?
Yeah.
That's basically everyone on the internet, so we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's normal. Fearing surveillance, man shot at Google and set a self-driving car ablaze.
No.
Okay, now this is, my empathetic instinct says the guy's crazy. Yeah. It's called paranoid schizophrenic. He told police he feared surveillance by Google, and he's been arrested and charged with arson after one of the company's self-driving cars was destroyed in an attack in June. And then he was hanging around the campus in Mountain View after midnight. In the car, he had homemade explosives and, good Lord, a pipe bomb and the firearms and, oh my goodness.
Let me give you a hint, Google. Never go into the dentistry business because people will think that you've installed transmitters in
your
teeth.
Yeah. I mean, that's a sad situation. I think
But it's dangerous, too.
But very dangerous. We're lucky nothing more serious happened.
Well, it was his third time. What I thought was, it kind of proved it proved him wrong in some ways because it was his third attempt to.
And they never knew.
To blow up a car. So they caught him on surveillance video. But if they were truly stalking him, they probably would have stopped him sooner.
If we're that good, why didn't you know that was going to happen?
So. The old psychic joke, yeah.
Mm-hmm. More on tap. Translate, discover, and improved search by image. This from the Google Inside Search blog today.
Do you use Now on Tap?
Only by accident.
I don't think. I mean, only for the show have I used it.
That's when you're on a page and you hold the home button down a little extra, and a little screen comes up. Now you can do translate. Translate any text on the screen. If you're on Google Maps and you come across a location, a restaurant review in a foreign language, just hold it down. You can even do multiple languages at once.
Let me try this.
English, French, German, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, and Russian. Although the example they're giving is in Japanese, so I don't know what that means. Discover more interesting content. Tap the Discover icon and get a stream of visual content related to what's on your screen. So they're showing Earth may have a second moon, according to NASA. You do Now on Tap, press and hold the home button, and of course you have to have Marshmallow for this. And you'll get a whole bunch of, looks like, probably
videos.
They're not all YouTube, though. There's some Yahoo videos in there. That's good.
This looks like somebody, I would have the worst time with this. I'm the type of person who used to go to the dictionary to look up words and end up reading everything else.
It's for you.
I would never get anything done.
This feature's for you.
No.
Search by image, barcodes, and QR codes. So you can use Now on Tap to search via your camera app for objects like famous landmarks. And now they're including barcodes and QR codes. So the next time you're shopping, if you see a QR code or a barcode, you point your camera at it and you'll get helpful cards related to that object, such as user reviews. It will work with packaged products, books, DVDs, and more. Wait a minute. Let me see. Is there a barcode on this? I got to try this. So what do I do? Okay, here's a barcode. Do I have to have the camera going? And then press and hold now on tap. And yes, it did. It's looking it up. Oh, my gosh. That was cool.
What's it look like?
Do you have the over the shoulder? Because we can do it again. I can do it again. I can do it again. So I say, oh, there's a barcode. Let's press and hold the home button. You see, now and tap encircled it, and it looked it up. And there it is. That's what I'm looking at.
Can you scroll up and see, like, lower pricing or anything else?
Okay. It offers Google, Discover, Shopping, YouTuber, Share. Let's tap the shopping icon. And then it's going to pull up Google Shopping. And, yes, I can shop for
it. Okay.
So, Leo, go, for example, to the New York Times site.
Okay. Let's try that.
Hold down the button.
Okay. Wait a minute. Hold on.
You're trying to figure out the logic of this.
New York Times. I'm on the New York Times site. Okay.
Hold down the button.
Okay. Let's hold down the button. Hold down the now and tap
go to
button.
Discover. Now, I've never seen Discover really before. So go to Discover, and it's kind of a somewhat related but random story.
Yeah. I was looking at Hillary Clinton. Rough day for Clinton sends wave of regret through the GOP, and I got Bill Cunningham's obituary after I pressed Discover.
What is their top story?
I go to Twitter, and I get Hillary Clinton because the story is about Hillary. Okay, fine.
It seems to be just random New York Times stories. Maybe okay. So let me actually go into a story. This is open with the New York. Okay. Oh, now I'm going to. Should I do it in the New York Times app or the Chrome?
You can see what happens.
Because otherwise, I see. Oh, maybe you could do it in the app.
I think I can. That's the whole point of now on tap, right?
Right, exactly. Of course.
So wouldn't that be kind of cool? You're reading an article and you say, "I want to see some opposing points of view." Now on tap gave me Hillary Rodham Clinton.
So click on Twitter, you're going to get her Twitter account.
Twitter account, would it? Is that what I'm going to get?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, that's a nice way to quickly find somebody's account. I think that could be useful. As with a lot of this stuff, you've got to be trained to think of it.
Yeah, trained.
I like the barcode thing. That's great.
That is. That's super helpful. And if it's image search, I'm curious because you know how Pinterest just did their whole image search stuff where you can hold your phone up and take a picture of something search by image for similar things in Pinterest. It's not with your phone.
That would be very useful, actually.
It is. It's too. And yeah. If you think about it, it could give you, you know, it could.
Does it do? Let's say, all right, I'm going to look at this mouse. this is a very distinctive mouse. If it does image recognition. No, see, nothing.
No.
Nothing.
Okay. Because I was like, if you could do image recognition, then. Think about all the cool stuff you could do.
Would that be great? Well, they say for landmarks, you can do that. So if I'm standing in front of a landmark, you know, the Washington Monument, and do it, it'll say, you know.
But that's a database thing as opposed to like actual computer vision. Sigh.
But they're getting there.
I'm like, come on, future.
Yeah, it's progress. It's progress.
Come on, future. Hurry up. Forget Manju. Don't listen to Farhad. Hurry up, future.
Future. Come here. Come here, future. Come here.
Was it Field Trip or Google Goggles where you could... this is like years ago where you could hold up your phone and see where you were in the world. Like Google would give you data about.
Yeah. Google landmarks. Goggles did that.
Does it still do that?
Okay. Does it still exist? I don't think they even have Google Goggles anymore.
Yeah. But that's what this sounds like, right?
Yeah. All right. They said, let me try it with your face. Somebody said, try it with a face. You think it would do? No, it's not going to do that. Cause that would just, that would enable creeping. Yeah. No, it doesn't do that. But you know, it could though, right?
Oh, yeah.
It could easily say, that's Stacey Higginbotham.
I have her picture in her Google Plus profile.
Right. I wish it would do that, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Speaking as an old man with no memory, I would be very useful. Hey, hold on a second. Just stay there. Oh, hi, George. We went to school together. I see you have two children. That would be
Leo,
so
you
useful.
Have this problem. You must
no,
have
because then that
all the time. All the time.
And you don't know whether
you wouldn't
really
believe how many people come here and with all and don't mind this and say, do you remember I was at the cottage 5 years ago? It happens to me almost every day. Yeah. And I always say, oh, yeah, it's nice to see you again.
Did I tell you how the affectation when I was a columnist in San Francisco and God bless them, they had my face on news boxes and news trucks for a little while. Right.
Wow.
And nose sized.
Wow.
So people would come up and say,
is that when you worked
Jeff.
At the Examiner?
Yeah.
I remember that. The Examiner trucks would go around with the columnists.
Yeah, with those days, huh?
Wow. That's
fame and glory, huh? So the problem was that if you say hi to someone, it contains an ellipsis. Like, hi, Leo.
Right.
right? So you can't say, I can't say hi, so I started saying howdy. Because you don't say howdy. That's
very California.
You know, you just howdy. Say howdy.
What do they say howdy in Austin? Howdy?
Howdy, y'all.
By the way, Goggles is still around. I apologize.
It is.
Yeah. And it does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it does the same thing. It has search from camera. Get Goggles results for pictures you take. If you've enabled location in the settings app as well as in Google settings, they will send location data. Okay. So now it does. You take a picture of something and it'll figure out where
will it recognize your logo?
That's a good question.
That's exciting. Oh, that's good TV.
Good TV.
Tell you.
Yeah, it's not even doing anything.
Oh, maybe it's really gone.
Maybe it doesn't work. It just pretended to work. Oh, analyzing. Activate camera light. Oh, my God, it worked.
Oh, you're kidding.
It says, This Week in Tech, MP3 edition, Petaluma Landmark.
Oh, you're a landmark.
OMG. Thank you, Goggles. Welcome
right,
to the landmark.
Do Stacey's face.
Okay, now we're going to do Stacey's face because she's a landmark in Austin.
Oh, yes.
What a cute smile. All right. Let's see. Wait a minute. Now, what happened there? Okay. Activate camera light. Oh, we got to do it again. What's going on? It's kind of slow.
It's rejecting my face.
It's wait a minute. You're not going to like this at all.
Oh, no.
I now know why Google thinks you're a boy.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. That's so mean. I apologize.
I apologize for Google.
Oh, that's so sad.
That is so mean.
Oh, it's.
You know, it's the short hair, I think.
It's the short. I'm not wearing lipstick. I mean, there's a lot of things wrong here from a Google perspective. Although, did it put me in glasses?
It did put you in glasses, which is really weird. It's really weird.
Do your own face. Do your own face. I'm installing it now.
Should I do it? Okay, I'll do my own face.
Take a
picture
of yourself.
We are such idiots. God, people turn in this show to learn something. Instead, we're going, hey, here's this 5-year-old program we've just rediscovered. Look what it'll do. Yeah, Leo, it did that 5 years ago, you nitwit.
Yeah. The next show, we'll stick hats and funny filters over our faces.
Done. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
I should do it to you, Jeff, because it probably.
Okay, do it to me.
Would you think it would think you're a woman?
Probably. it'll think I'm dead.
I was like, not with that beard, I hope.
He used to be on the side of a examiner.
Oh, no.
It thinks you're a terrorist, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Leonardo DiCaprio. That's good. George Clooney.
Hey.
Oh, what's his name? Gyllenhaal.
What is the label above that? What does it say?
It says, no objects recognized. Browse similar images. There you go. We found you, Jeff.
that's impressive facial hair right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. I think that'd be a good look for you.
Yeah, I like that. Amish Jeff.
Amish, this is very odd. I'm going to do you again, Stacey. I don't think we did you justice.
I think I'm about to be humiliated again.
I just feel we could do better. I don't know. I just, you know, maybe if I just took it straight on instead, you know, like that. I like how it does this analyzing. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm still a boy.
Worse.
Oh, am I an animal? That's going to be my new Google profile.
It's just really decided that you are a freak, apparently.
It's the blue in the hair. That's got to be what it is.
Why? What? Google? What? It doesn't, not at all. Not at all. The hell? This is just not, this is mean.
I was worried about this being creepy built into something, but I'm not worried.
It's just weird.
Oh.
There's, you know, yeah. Are you worried about Google search results? I don't think so. Can I do a picture of me? Wait a minute. Let me.
That's hard to do. Okay, yeah.
Do you have to use the rear camera? Can you?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like I could turn it around. It's not for. It's not made for selfies. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's really good. I think we're going to retire this application. Okay. Yeah, that's me. That's me right there in a nutshell. Yeah, that's me. All right. So Google goggles, not so great.
Not so great.
Not so great.
Or we're just not landmarks. That's the challenge.
It worked with, what's weird is it worked with the Twit logo. Yeah, I think you have to be a landmark. Or maybe, I wonder, I should take a picture of a famous person with this and see if they're recognized.
Put up George Clooney, and it will put up me.
That would be pretty impressive. And I don't know how George would feel about that. But
I'm like, screenshot that and give it to Jeff. It would make his day.
Google did recently buy a image recognition company from France. 2 weeks after Twitter acquired Magic Pony. In a little bit of confusion over the name, because I think Twitter probably thought it was a magic pony. That was for machine learning. Google has announced it's acquired Moodstox, which is a startup out of Paris that develops machine learning-based image recognition for smartphones. Shazam for images, they call it. Kind of interesting. Moodstox, yeah.
That would give it the AI ability to have you take a photo of something and be like, oh, bam, here's other things that are this.
I mean, that's kind of what we were just doing, but maybe Google realized they could do a little bit better.
I was like, mood stocks. We'll make sure I'm not the person with monster tattooed in front of my face.
Wow. That is just awesome. Wow. And here's that wonderful Euro cookie privacy statement that appears everywhere I go. That's really, you know what? I feel so much better now that all those sites have those. Let's see. Wi-Fi kiosks, we did that. 10 million Android devices are infected with Chinese malware. Well done. Mostly not in U.S., but I guess something to be aware of. You have to go to a third-party store, I believe. The malware called Hummingbird actually comes from a Chinese ad company. Let me turn off my audio. I don't know. I hate auto start videos. Thank you, CNET. It's a team of developers at a company called Yingmob, which is an otherwise legitimate advertising analytics agency based in Beijing. But they apparently have a team responsible for developing malicious components. The development team for overseas platform, 25 employees. Hummingbad, it was a drive-by download in which phones were infected when people visited websites. So I guess you didn't have to install it intentionally. The first component attempts to gain root access on a device with a rootkit that exploits multiple vulnerabilities. Probably the stage fright, I would guess, vulnerability, but I'm not sure. If successful, attackers gain full access to a device. If that fails, the second component uses a fake system update notification, tricking users into granting Hummingbad system-level permissions. It generates fraudulent advertising revenue through the forced downloading of apps and clicking of ads. And researchers say Checkpoint, which discovered this, said they're making about $300,000 a month, they would guess, on doing this. Most of the victims in China and India, 1.6 million in China, 1.35 million in India, Philippines, Indonesia, Turkey. The U.S., though, has 228,800 infected devices. The U.K. and Australia, fewer than 100,000. Wow. And coming from a legitimate company, that's what's really interesting. They actually have a division to do this kind of stuff.
So what are the best practices right now for security on my phone, for example?
Getting a phone, and you nailed it, Stacey, when you said it, that does the Android monthly security update.
Okay.
And Samsung does it. LG does it. I'm pretty sure HTC does it. That was one of in fact, pretty much the only question mark on this OnePlus. OnePlus has not yet said whether they plan to. There was some question about it. But I notice I'm up to date through June. I would guess in the next week I'll get the July update. And if that's the case, then this would be another one. And the reason is there are issues most of those, I would almost guarantee most of those affected phones, and the reason it's so big in China and India, are inexpensive phones that have not been updated ever, and they're running older versions of Android. Although, you know, there is a way to tell if you have humming bad. CNET has an article, How to Kill Humming Bad. How can I turn this off? Autoplay off. Thank you. Thank you, CNET. I don't want to watch your video.
Is there not an app that lets you just stop, like kind of like ad blocker, only
No, in fact, you know what's funny? I have you block Origin running an ad blocker on this, and it's still auto running.
Well, that because it's legit
first party site. Yeah, it's coming directly from their site. I thought you were going to ask if there was an app, an antivirus app you could run on Android, and there really isn't anything that's effective. Google does the most effective thing, which is scan downloads every time you download something. Unless you've disabled it, Google will scan it. There are third-party apps that do something similar. Lookout is a very well-known one. But the way mobile devices are designed, you really don't, generally, you don't let apps kind of snoop around on the hard drive, right. Scanning for things, stuff like that.
It's so much better than the old days when I had a Windows machine, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and the hell you go through with that and your father.
Yeah.
It's gotten better. The security situation is much better.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are much more malicious bad attacks out there, like ransomware attacks. I think we saw the first ransomware attacks on smartphones this week.
Oh.
Yeah. I think there's an Android. Let me just check real quickly. Ransomware. Ransomware is really nasty because what it does is it gets on your system and encrypts your files and then says, if you want to ever see your files again, you got to pay us. Yeah. We've been talking, this is aggressive Android ransomware spreading in the U.S. Actually, this is from last year. Sorry, that's not an up-to-date story. Cyber Police Android ransomware. It's been in the wild for some time, but it's using a new technique. So, yeah, ransomware would be the thing you really don't want to get.
Well, isn't there also some sort of, I guess this would be ransomware. It's not encryption, though. It takes your photos and threatens to send them out to everybody.
Bad enough. That would be bad. That would be a bad thing.
Happened to a friend of mine. And
did it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't a terrible photo, but, you know, it was a little sexier than she probably wanted.
It found a provocative photo?
Mm-hmm.
How, I mean, like it was looking for provocative photos?
I don't know if there was a person behind it and they got all of her photos and picked the most embarrassing one.
But they found the most embarrassing one.
Yeah, well,
wow.
It was embarrassing enough. So
she said, okay.
She did not pay the rent. They sent it out. That's how I know about it because I got a copy of my friend.
That's horrific.
Right.
It is.
That's what I'm like. I'm like,
that's terrible.
So, but I don't know what that was. And I looked for more information about this because I was like, holy cow,
with ransomware, if you have a good backup, and the truth is most Android devices are probably backed up. There's nothing on there that you can't afford to just wipe the phone and start over. But that bypasses that. If it can find a compromising photo and send it out.
This is why I have no compromising photos on my phone.
Wow. Wow, nor do I. My wife put the kibosh on that. Oh, honey, stay right there. No. Don't move. I love that. So the ransomware that is reported in this article, it's called Cyber Police because you get a pop-up that says, this is the Cyber Police. And you've been up to no good. All actions are illegal. Our fixed history query stored in the database of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Attention, your device has been locked. Reasons indicated below. And then if you have 71 hours on this screenshot to give them money to get your thing unlocked. The ransom, two $100 Apple iTunes gift cards.
Jesus.
And by the way, it doesn't do anything. But the thing is, this gets on your machine the same way that previous one did by a sideload from a web page. This takes advantage of older Android devices. This is not going to impact you if you have an up-to-date Android device, in my opinion.
Oh, okay. So they're saying, I can never say it, Kaspersky Labs did a report at the end of June saying, yes, there's a fourfold increase in the number of users attacked using Android ransomware.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible.
All right. Well, I feel kind of sad and dirty.
But have an up-to-date iPhone device. I think you're probably all right. Because these take advantage, basically, of flaws in the operating system. The problem is that because of the way Google has done Android, there are a lot of phones that are not being patched. And Google's doing the best they can to fix that. They're moving a lot of the components that were part of the updated operating system out into Play Store, where they can be updated automatically via Play Store mechanisms. They've instituted these monthly security patch fixes, which are really, I think, important. But there's nothing they can do about low-cost Android devices that were, you know, sold and have never been updated by the carrier since. They're with older versions. A lot of them are vulnerable because of the stage fright vulnerability. Google now is trying to twist the knife in its victory against Oracle. They're asking for sanctions against the Oracle attorney. You sue us, we will murder you and your children. But this was interesting. It pays Apple $1 billion to be on the iPhone. What? That's an interesting. Yeah. This is Joe Mullen writing in Ars Technica. What's the deal there, Stacey?
The attorney basically shared the details of this deal, $1 billion on the iPhone. So, and they're like, dude, that was under legal, protected.
Yeah. So this was during the discovery procedure. Annette Hurst, the Oracle attorney, said that Google's Android operating system had generated revenue of $31 billion. That's $22 billion in profit. Oh, I remember when this came out.
It was big.
And for the Google search bar on iPhones, they pay Apple $1 billion. So they want her to be censured. And the figure to be struck from the record. A little late for that. That's Google's right to be forgotten. That percentage just stated that should be sealed. We are talking.
Yeah, this is just sour grapes. This is like, okay, fine. We're just going to make your life a little bit harder.
Well, why not?
Exactly. If you've got the lawyers and the budget, why not?
Go for broke.
Scorch that earth.
Yes. You'll never sue us again. And actually, to add insult to injury, a jury has just ruled that Oracle's going to pay $3 billion to HP Enterprise for some patents that they... the Itanium... Actually, it wasn't patents. It was Itanium Systems that Hewlett-Packard stopped making, I guess. Actions that contributed to the decline of a once lucrative line of high-end computers. Oracle violated a contract when it decided to stop creating new versions of its database software for the Itanium chip, which HP was still selling into Enterprise. Amazon Robot. What?
I was like, what?
What?
Amazon Robot.
Amazon AI. Robot Challenge. Deep learning AI, a robotic arm that could do the work of a warehouse worker 3 times faster.
It will not take long.
Yeah.
They'll be aiming for that.
Well, they already, you know, it's already somewhat automated, right? Because of the pick and pull system that moves you around. So it's just really the arm is the one thing the human's contributing at this point. And these robots are getting better.
They could get the dog from Boston Dynamics, the new one. That empties the dishwasher for you?
What?
Yeah.
I'm buying that.
That's not what its sole job is.
A dishwashing, emptying dog?
Yeah, go look at it. This was a couple of weeks ago. It's the latest version of the nightmare.
That's not so scary anymore, yeah.
Oh, it's still scary. That thing is, God, it haunts my dreams.
No, but it empties your dishwasher.
And it brings you Cokes.
It is scary looking, though. You're absolutely right. It kind of looks like a dinosaur. A raptor. Okay, there it goes. Oh, these are the Boston Dynamics dogs. They're not as noisy either, right? They're now battery.
Right, they got rid of the hydraulics.
Yeah.
Oh, this isn't the video where they do the dishwasher.
I thought it was. They're just taking a walk. They're walking the dog. Look, it can go under its... dog tricks. Robotic dog tricks. Isn't that cute? Stupid pet tricks with the dog. No, I think he's going to go in and help that in the... God, you would just be terrified if you looked behind you and that was walking around, wouldn't it?
Oh, I don't know what show I was at, but I was next to the original one. Like the real version of it.
Oh, you've seen it in person?
Yes, it is. It is just as scary as you would imagine. Like if that.
Look at that head. What's it doing? Push-ups?
It's showing how it can keep the head at one position while the body changes.
And the lack of hydraulics.
Is there sound on this, Karsten?
Here we go. It needs a tail.
Oh, that's not how you load a dishwasher, Spot.
That's how my daughter and my husband load the dishwasher.
Right. They just throw stuff in.
They're like, it's in there.
It's in there. It'll get clean. Look.
But look, it's
that's
recycling.
Not recycling. It is recycling. Good job, Spot. Oh, God. It slipped on banana peels. Literally. There's banana.
So mean at Boston Dynamics.
I'm telling you, they're remembering all this. Look at all the marks against the wall of robots falling.
Yeah.
Oh, this is terrible. This is terrible.
It will chase after you.
Oh, Farhad, it's okay.
This is Farhad's right.
Oh, bring the
now. What it's got its head stored on its top on top of it. It's trotting.
Dancer version.
Why do they make them so scary looking? If they made it like cuddlier,
they need a tail that wags.
So glad Google sold that company.
Oh. Like, ooh, okay, I'm done.
Here's cinder blocks. How do these guys not laugh? Whoa, whoa! Oh my God, it just threw a cinder block. I don't think you want a dog that'll do that.
No.
Holy cow.
What's disturbing is that same little clicking dance that it does before it throws it is the same like thing my dog does when she's excited about a treat. Scary juxtaposition there.
Oh my God. Now, I guess the point of this is this could be digging out people out of
rubble.
But you better hope you're not behind it.
Or that you're not like it's not owned by police and you're like trying to get away.
Yeah.
Stacey, have you been being bad lately for thinking that way?
Mm-hmm. No, but as a journalist, I'm always like, how can the state use something like this against?
You're right. Period? Well, she lives in Texas, right. Jeff. Remember?
Oh, that's true. How can I buy it and use it for my own defense?
Exactly.
Can I outfit this with a gun?
Yeah.
So,
well, pardon me for this, but yeah, Texas could use it for executions.
Oh, nobody killed them. Stone them to death.
The machine did it.
Oh, guys, no, that is not humane.
Stacey, do you conceal carry?
No,
okay.
I don't.
Okay, just checking. I'm
anti-gun.
To upset you. But you see how this preserves the peace? If I know you're armed, I'm not going to, you know, do anything too challenging.
Oh, I could take you, Leo. Totally.
You don't know I'm not armed.
Like, what about my martial arts
training? You probably could take me. I'm sure you could. I always told my kids that. Don't yell at people as we drive down the street. You don't know if they're armed or not.
So my parents used to tell me this, and it was kind of nice when I lived in New York because I could yell at anyone walking down the street, and I felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But in Texas, mm-mm. That's actually true.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it makes us a more civil society.
It does not. It's
this is an example of Leo doing the devil's advocate.
No, I'm...
And just so you know, Stacey, don't worry. Don't go like, too early. I am on the show with this guy. You're on with Leo's alter ego right now. But Leo will come back. Leo will return.
If everybody in that nightclub in Orlando was carrying a gun,
there would be more people dead.
No. Just the one.
Yes, more people dead.
Yes.
Probably also the shooter, which makes people feel good, but...
Others, well, collateral damage.
Yeah. Friendly fire? That doesn't belong in nightclubs.
No, I agree. Finally, Yahoo is going to get sold. Finally. Maybe. Finally. A third round of bids comes in today, and then the final selection process in about 2 weeks. Verizon still, according to Recode, the leading bidder. Tim Armstrong, the head of AOL, is leading the negotiations. The founder of Quicken Loans, Dan Gilbert, and private equity firm TPG also apparently in the running. Current bids estimated to be around $3.5 billion to $5 billion for Yahoo's core business. That's down a lot from the $8 billion, I think it was, that they were talking initially. And this article and see. Why don't we keep getting
How much was Microsoft going to spend on it?
Oh, was it 21?
I was just looking that up. I'm like,
21, 31 billion, some huge amount?
It was crazy.
It was huge.
And it was about this time because it was around Sun Valley that they had their little billionaire sleepover and trying to do all that.
By the way, Dan Gilbert, the Quicken Loans founder, also owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, the world champion Cleveland Cavaliers.
And poor Marissa didn't get invited to Sun Valley this year.
Really?
They say, yeah.
That's a burn.
She's not there. I thought she's had twins. Maybe she said, I don't want to go. I'm busy through the sale.
Yeah, just like I don't want to go to Apple events. I don't want to go to this. I don't want to go. It's okay. You don't have to invite me. I don't want to go. So we'll just have to wait and see. Meyer will get a pretty big payout.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was something like $53 million, her buyout.
But she's the kind of person who, you know, could sit back on her Google money. She could sit back and do nothing for the rest of her life.
No.
She'll go do something else.
It's an affront. And I don't think it's clear that she didn't save Yahoo, but I don't think it's clear that she could have saved Yahoo.
I agree.
I think someone told me this, and I thought it was actually a really astute point, is that she was brought in as a product person, and what Yahoo really needed at the time was a financial engineering person who could basically monetize what it had and get out.
I think that's probably true.
So Microsoft's bid in 2008 was $31 a share worth $44.6 billion.
That's where the 31 came from, the $31 a share. $44 billion. Now, did Yahoo turn that down?
Yes.
Yes. Yang was like, and now, Microsoft.
Yahoo reportedly asked for $40 a share.
Yeah.
And Steve Ballmer went, oh, wow, we just dodged a bullet. Wow.
They bought Nokia. Not for as much.
Not nearly as much, yeah. Our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. Time to invest, time to save. Long-term savings, so important to your financial future. If the kids are going to college, they're important. If you plan to retire ever, it's important. Maybe you want to buy a house or just a rainy day fund. But the question is, once you start building your nest egg, how do you keep it growing? You're not going to put it in your mattress or your savings account, which is about the same thing these days. Interest rates are so low. So you're going to invest it, right? Are you going to do that? You're going to do the work, the reading, the research? I did. Problem is, you also then have to pay attention, like, every few months, readjust, reassign, reinvest. I did that for a while, and then I forgot about it. And 10 years later, I went, I wonder how those investments are going. That was not a good plan. You could go to an investment advisor. Go to the guy down in the strip mall here, and he'll charge you. Oh, yeah, he will. Between 1% and 3% of what you have under management every year. That means you'd have to make 3% more just to break even. Not to mention the hidden fees, the transaction costs. I got a better way. Wealthfront, because it's a computer managing, you may say, I don't want a computer. Yes, you do. Because the computer software has the best, most intelligent thinking about investments already built into it. It monitors your investments, not weekly or monthly or yearly, but constantly. So it does things like tax loss harvesting and rebalancing every minute. Constantly adjusting to get you the best return and the lowest tax bill. You can do this for college savings, too. They just introduced their 529 college savings plan. So, like a Roth IRA, it lets you invest after-tax dollars and save for a child or grandchild's college and other higher education expenses. They've got retirement. They've got long-term investments of all kinds. If you go to Wealthfront right now, wealthfront.com/twig, if you will, you can get a sample portfolio based on the few questions. It's not a big questionnaire they ask you, but they've really boiled it down to just a few simple questions. They'll make a portfolio for you. You can see what they would invest in for you. You can really get a sense of the idea. You can even bring your existing portfolio and have them automatically, no human, take a look at what your costs are, what you're losing to expenses and that kind of thing. If you do decide to invest, it starts at $500. That's the minimum investment. And we're going to do something really nice. Actually, they do it. They're going to manage your first $15,000 absolutely fee-free forever. So not only is it only 0.25% a year, but it's on the assets above the first $15,000. And you'll never pay commissions or transaction fees. It's really a good way to do this. It's just, you set it and you forget it, and it's fantastic. Wealthfront, find out more. Wealthfront.com/twig. Get that free portfolio. Answer the questions so you can really get a sense of what's involved. I think you'll be very impressed. Wealthfront.com/twig. Senator Warren says Apple, Google, and Amazon have too much power. Competition is dying in America. It's all because of mergers. You agree? I really like Elizabeth Warren, but I think maybe that's not the best message to send right now.
No, it's not. But it's the European view of antitrust, that big is bad, as opposed to the American view of antitrust is, does it pass the test of harming competition?
And that's the law, by the way.
In the U.S.
In the U.S., antitrust law says you have to use your nothing wrong with monopoly unless you use it to enter new markets and harm competition. Right. Nothing wrong with being big.
So she's arguing for a different definition of antitrust, which is just big is bad. But then
I don't disagree with her that we maybe have a few too many mergers, that the oversight hasn't been great. Although they've stopped a few. Sprint and T-Mobile, remember, and
AT&T and T-Mobile.
That's yeah.
And
there have been a few, I think, good moves there.
Tech First,
what's it called? The cable one.
Right. Time Warner and Comcast.
But they allowed Charter and Comcast. That's right.
And that was that the FTC who was going for that, or was that the FCC?
It would have been two? FCC, right?
Well, they both have to agree.
They both have to agree. Yeah.
I can't remember who actually made the call.
I think the FCC said it was anti-competitive.
Yeah, they were not wrong.
Yep.
I'm trying to.
Airline mergers have been a mess, right? Continental, United, American, U.S. Air. And as a result,
so as a United customer, I've got to say I was a Continental customer. Now I'm a United customer, and I have benefits because I fly a lot, and I'm better off at more routes. I got to say.
Ms. Warren voiced potential concern about three major tech companies. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Google, Apple, and Amazon, because they control essential tech platforms that other smaller companies depend upon for survival.
So this gets
and the problem is, what have they done? Go ahead, Stacey.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is the same argument that actually has been made in the past about like the broadband people. And that's what net neutrality kind of was trying to solve because there's a lack of competition there. It's really interesting to actually see it move up a layer in the stack from like the access layer to the application layer. That doesn't make it right. I'm just like, I see where the temptation to do this comes in. And I just don't see a way for her to justify it.
I mean, God bless America. You can become very successful. And one could absolutely argue that Google has taken the money it's made and instead of, you know, plowing it into, well, Ireland, but instead of plowing it into, you know, savings bonds, has invested it into new markets, new sectors, and fostered innovation in areas that frankly wouldn't have been. Look at Google Fiber, would not have seen that kind of innovation.
Exactly.
On the other hand, I think that there is a lot to be said for the fact that if you're an entrepreneur and you want to start a business, you probably hope that Google doesn't decide that that's a good business for it to be in, because that's it for you, right? Unless they buy you.
That's true. That's true, Leo. But on the other hand, there's all kinds of businesses that you can start now that you couldn't have started if Google didn't exist.
Well, and Amazon, too, with Amazon Web Services.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right. And eBay and name them. There's other mergers I would like to see happen. Here's a merger. I just thought about this this week. I'm talking about the show. You know what I want to see happen? I want to see... I'm a customer of Fios. I've had problems with Verizon Mobile, don't you know? But I'm a very happy customer of Verizon Fios. It works wonderfully, but it's orphaned, right? I'm always nervous that they're gonna decide to get out of this. Years ago, they didn't expand anymore. They're just getting more customers in the markets where they are. Google Fiber should buy Fios.
Ah,
that would be great.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? And you bring the Google quality. And so, guarantees.
Instead, they're selling it. Verizon sold Fios in LA to Frontier.
Well, they did.
Okay, no, they sold their DSL lines to Frontier.
Oh, not the. I thought it was fiber. Oh.
Let's double check that. But so Verizon needs its Fios lines because it's actually going to become the basis of its next generation for the small cells networks. It needs the dense fiber coverage in areas. So it's actually expanding Fios in Boston for this.
Really? But they stopped building. I mean, they really stopped a lot of the build-outs.
They really did stop a lot. Yeah. So what's going to happen? What we're going to see.
You're right. Verizon sold landlines to Frontier. So,
right. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
So Google's going to stop building out fiber to the home in a lot of places, too, I think. Because what we're about to happen is gigabit wireless. So you're going to have fiber to a node, basically. Right. And then you're going to have... the 5G spectrum, so the FCC classifies that in any of the gigahertz spectrum. So that's actually what we're about to see. And
Google is going to six new cities, though, Stacey.
Right. No, it is. And it has to have fiber in the ground to build out.
So, for instance, it's in Austin, but you're not getting it because you're not in the specific geographic region. But now that the fiber's there, you may well get high-speed wireless via Google because they have the fiber into
which goes back to our discussion about the kiosks on the street. That's why that's kind of stupid and worthless. Whereas if you could turn that into pursuing wireless, then it's really valuable.
Yeah.
So the kiosks on the street are probably they're an information gathering device as opposed to an information delivery device. So you want to have as many of those kind of edge things as possible. And if you can get a city to actually pay for it and share that data with you, you're like it's like a gold mine. If you think strategically about what's happening in with that. So that's less about delivering. I mean, I know it's free Wi-Fi. That's your carrot, I think. Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
No. And I'm thrilled.
Like long silence.
You make me think, Stacey. I'm really glad you're on our team now because you're really so well informed. And I think you're exactly right. But getting back to Elizabeth Warren, I feel like it's going to be – this is interesting. This is that same thing that's going on in Europe, isn't it, Jeff?
Yep. It's anti-big, anti-technology. I just did an interview this morning with KGO Radio in San Francisco because I tweeted the contemplation of a tech tax in San Francisco.
Are they thinking about that?
Yes. And I just said, enough of biting the hand that feeds you, enough of looking the gift horse in the mouth. Fine. All those tech companies, come to New York. You'd be welcome here.
Yeah.
So we tried to make a, New York versus San Francisco thing. But it's a real problem, I think, in San Francisco. And it's what we said before about the New York Times and The Guardian, which I love, and other papers. The contrarian anti-technology attitude that's spreading across liberal worlds. This is Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
This is Europe.
Well, thank Bernie Sanders for that.
This is a real problem for our industry, for the things that we care about, for the galloping like a mechanical dog future coming our way.
Right. It's not a huge tax, by the way. It was only proposed by three members of San Francisco's Board of Supervisors. It's an attitude. 1.5% payroll tax just on tech companies.
And why single out the tech companies?
Right. I could see if you want to do that citywide.
That's a different matter.
But to say, tech companies, because you caused our homeless problem?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Hmm. It's Fine. Then take away all the tech companies tomorrow. And where are you, San Francisco? You're a cute little boutique with some good restaurants that won't be able to afford to live anymore.
Yeah. You have to be very careful. Look, we all want income equality or better. We don't want as much income inequality. We don't want, we don't want companies to use their power to strip mine the American economy. But at the same time, these companies are adding so much value and innovating so greatly. It's a balancing act. It's a balancing act. But the scale should not swing too far against these tech companies. I don't think.
But we see it over and over again now throwing crap at the buses. If San Francisco's problem with housing is scarcity. As long as San Francisco wants to be a low-rise, scarce little cute city, the housing price is going to go up. Welcome to capitalism. Right. You want lower housing prices? Authorize more building of housing units. Right.
So this is a failure of the city, and they're...
It's just these three supervisors. I think it's ultra liberal, socialists leaning.
I think there is. So people, there is a failure to communicate well to people about, and maybe even to allocate resources. I mean, if you want to fight income inequality or you want to have lower cost housing for people, the city has to make some decisions. And they have to decide to build more. They can decide to, institute all kinds of taxes. I mean, having a discussion about this isn't bad. We can mock these people for trying to do it, but I don't know. These are discussions that need to be had.
Homelessness is a huge problem in every city in the nation. It's not unique to San Francisco.
Very different.
Its unique problem is that it's 7 miles by 7 miles and it bounded by water and you cannot build any more. So there's a scarcity of housing.
You could go into the south of the city and build high rises if you chose to. Yeah.
But it wouldn't be the city. It'd be
the other issue. Well, that's what they said when the Transamerica Pyramid went up.
Right.
It was ruining the city.
Right.
Dianne Feinstein was accused of ruining the city by allowing more buildings to go in, which allowed more offices, which allowed more jobs. The other problem with San Francisco is that it is. Sorry, lights.
I've got just the motion sensor for you.
You need to get him hooked up, Stacey.
Yeah, Stacey.
Stacey does an IoT podcast, has an IoT website. She's an expert on motion sensors.
Where was I?
San Francisco problems.
Damn.
Dianne Feinstein, Transamerica
Pyramid.
The other
problem is, of course, it is a magnet for kooks. People looking for a dream.
Yeah.
Not just kooks, but I'll be nicer than that. People who think that it's going to solve their problem. It's the most wonderful place on earth. And it's San Francisco, a wonderful place. I loved it.
Oh, I love it.
I was there.
I still love it. It's Shangri-La.
Yeah, but that's the problem. It's Shangri-La, and people are drawn to that. And so San Francisco's homeless problem, I think, is, Stacey's right, is materially different from other cities.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 New York, even with the complaints of late, no, it's nothing like this in New York. Every other city I go to, no, San Francisco is absolutely, I don't want to say worse. That's a judgment. Yeah. Well, I'll say worse. Yeah. It's worse. Absolutely.
That in Seattle has the probably most obvious and maybe most aggressive homeless population.
Well, the only reason it would be germane to the conversation in San Francisco is if those people were made homeless by raising housing costs,
which is not the case.
I don't know if it's the case or not. I mean, but that's the only way it would be germane to this conversation.
Not the homeless. There are other people who can't afford. I mean, what you do have also, I think, is a real problem. Is how can you be a teacher on the peninsula teaching these incredibly rich tech people's children?
Well, that's a problem statewide.
That's actually a problem in Austin too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a problem in the entire country because we so undervalue education.
Newark has built where by the way, real estate's not expensive, but it's not as high quality. They built a housing complex for teachers. That's the way to think.
Yeah.
Right. But we need more. This is the same argument I had about taxes in the UK with Google and Facebook and I'm sorry, Google and Amazon. This is government's job. You shouldn't blame or expect the tech companies to solve these problems. They're doing what they should do as companies, which is make products and make money.
Right.
Well, the government is looking for a solution. I mean, that's what this payroll tax is a suggestion for. This government going, oh, crap, we have all these people. You know.
It's government, but it's government demonizing that one sector. There's plenty of evil bankers in San Francisco, believe me.
Well, you can't. Yeah. And what you don't want to get as a situation is, well, whatever the most successful sector of the economy is right now, let's blame them for our woes.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Right.
That isn't going to fly. By the way, Verizon did sell its fiber businesses in Texas and California to Frontier.
Oh, it did?
They sold landlines all over the country, but they sold the fiber business.
Please, no Verizon, please. Yeah. All is forgiven.
And Frontier, by the way, is not, from what I hear from all of my callers in Los Angeles, a very good steward of the business. People are furious.
So Googlers who are watching, I'm telling you, buy BIOS. Please, Google, buy BIOS.
That would be a great, what a great solution that would be. Would there be antitrust issues there?
Back to the discussion about Elizabeth Warren. So that would be something that we as customers would die for. But you bet your bippy right now, there would be.
You know why we want that? Because the internet service in this country is so uncompetitive that we want to see more competition. So you'd have to, again, you can't, there's no formula. You can't do it mechanically. You have to look at the situation and say, this would be good for competition, even though Google is a big incumbent. It isn't a big ISP. It would be a big company coming along to become a big ISP, to make competition for Comcast and Verizon and AT&T.
Yeah, you're right. And the reason it's okay is because Fios is only in overbuild situations.
Right. And
in no case is Fios the monopoly player. Fios came in to create the competition. Google can strengthen that competition.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't Hart Hanks. No, not Hart Hanks. What is the antitrust? There's an antitrust ratio.
Ratio.
There's a ratio that the FTC. Anyway, yes, Verizon buying Fios would not. Or sorry, yeah. Google buying Fios would not. Mess with that ratio. It's popular in telecom mergers to look at competition. I wish I could remember what it's called, but I can't. Anyway, it would totally pass. I think the biggest question actually would become from vertical integration, kind of like when Comcast bought NBC Universal.
Yeah, that didn't stop. That didn't bother anybody, did it?
Yeah, so they put some conditions on that, and they went forward. So I think that's probably how that deal would be viewed.
What do you think of Comcast putting Netflix on its set-top box? Is that a big deal? Kara Swisher says it's a very big deal.
It is, because Comcast has been...
They hate each other.
For years, just like, how can we screw over Netflix? I once wrote a story about seven ways, you know, Comcast is trying to, like, I don't know. Comcast is doing something devilish or evil to over-the-top service providers. So it is a big deal that it's putting it on its... cable box, because that's its flagship platform.
I should point out, from the consumer point of view, there's 800 ways to get Netflix already in your house. This doesn't add in any way consumer choice.
What it does add, though, is if I'm buying something that's on my cable box, I expect it to work and to be awesome. If I buy something...
You obviously do not have a Comcast X1 cable box. The worst. That's their state-of-the-art technology, and it is the only thing worse than it was the previous Comcast cable box.
I thought the X1 was better.
Oh, it's supposed to be. You must be seeing those ads, those great ads from Comcast. It's a piece of crap. It's the worst technology. It's exactly what you would expect from a company that doesn't have to innovate because they dominate and basically have a monopoly in markets. So they don't have to make something better, because what is your choice? Zero.
Until the FCC does force them to enable us to buy our own cable boxes.
I hope they do.
Better boxes.
I hope that happens.
X1 had a lot of promise. This was a great idea, but I own them, and I had a whole X1 setup, and slowly of trading them out for TiVos, even though it's hideously expensive transition to make. It's just unusable.
Would that FCC move change the DOCSIS standard that holds things back? Or do you still have to hold to DOCSIS?
You think the DOCSIS standard hold things back?
Yeah, DOCSIS that's a physical. No, it's a physical layer thing.
That's a good thing.
That's fine. That's good. That means everyone.
Oh.
Because that's like Wi-Fi. It's kind of like the equivalent of Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it means you can buy a cable modem that is lives to the standard and doesn't have to be from Comcast and plug it in. And right. that is a very good thing.
Oh. What the FCC wants to do is make cable boxes more like the internet, make you able to access anything that's on the internet via a cable box. And right now, cable companies run their own software and control everything that goes through a cable box.
Well, that is why this is a big deal, right? Because now you've got an over-the-top service on your cable box.
This is Comcast basically saying, wait, before you regulate us, let me show you how we're being nice here.
By the way,
that's what this is.
It's the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index.
Oh, there you go. See, no wonder I didn't.
How could you forget that?
How could you forget? Thank you, Gardner. Gardner in the chat room says, as a matter of fact, it's the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index. It's a very important index. You got it.
I like him.
No, because Gardner's great, actually. He comes up with
good stuff. These are the things that, you know, I've spent years reading about, learning about, and then forgetting their names.
Well, there's only so much room in that head for information.
That's true.
And any head.
And Google is my alternate.
Exactly. We don't need to know this stuff anymore.
So anyway, this is actually Comcast also with their data cap. Remember a couple months ago, they boosted it to a terahertz. But
I think it was one and a half terabytes. It was a huge amount, right?
I think it's 1 terabyte.
1 terabyte. All right.
And that was because they saw the FCC putting conditions on Time Warner Cable and Charter.
Right.
So
right.
Comcast isn't stupid. They're big, but they're not stupid.
Yeah, they do what they have to.
I'm not saying they're like going out. Yeah. They're not altruists.
Yeah. No, they're not altruists. And I wonder what the economic relationship, what the business deal is, right? Does Comcast get a buck from Netflix now for every subscriber?
Well, is this, does Comcast favor Netflix? Is this a net neutrality?
Well, I think the whole point of this is so Comcast can point at that and say, what do you mean? We're net neutral. Look at that. We actually put a Netflix on our box. So don't do that thing, FCC, with the net neutrality and the cable box. Don't do that.
Oh, that's true. This could be a way to get around the data caps. So if Netflix is all
over the top.
That's
what I'm saying.
Yeah. And because their cable box stuff shouldn't be.
No. X1 does not count against your caps.
So then this is a way to grandfather Netflix.
So this zero bases Netflix.
Yeah, zero rating. Yeah, there's zero rating Netflix.
Netflix.
Great.
So Netflix sold us out.
What's the Hirschfeld-Heinfingel ratio on that, I ask you? Yeah, there must be, right? That must be the deal. Yeah,
that's what it
is. And don't
is.
You think Netflix is paying for that a little bit? A couple of bucks a month?
Or maybe they just sold their soul. But I'm serious, because they were the biggest advocate for net neutrality.
Right.
Yep.
They've been moving in that direction, I think, for a while.
Has Susan Crawford said anything about this?
I was about to say, let's call Susan. We'll have
to go
check. She usually takes a day or so to write.
Yeah, because she actually thinks. Jeez, we're no fun.
Oh, I was going to say, she has a real job.
File, Susan, file.
I'll check. I'll ask Comcast. Next week I can tell you.
If it counts against caps?
Yeah, because we are making an assumption here. But the journalist in me is like, wait, we can't actually say this yet.
You're right.
So I'll shoot an
email. Oh, Stacy.
I know.
Fun out of it.
I do. I suck the joy out of our tirades.
You know who else is sucking the joy out of Snapchat? Grown-ups.
Yep.
Teens are not happy as their mom and dad are starting to use Snapchat. According to the Wall Street Journal, 14% of U.S. smartphone users 35 and up use Snapchat. 14%, that is up from 2% 3 years ago. 70% of all smartphone users are on Snapchat. Everybody uses Snapchat. I bet you use Snapchat, don't you, Stacy?
So I have it, but I don't actually use it because...
Yeah. Because you want to give your child a place to...
My child does not have Snapchat.
No, we're all too old.
How can you be too old for Snapchat?
Oh, we're too old.
I've got so much stuff that is going on in my life. I'm like, do I really need Snapchat?
I post less on social media than ever. Before, really. I don't know why.
When you quit Twitter?
I've practically quit Twitter. I mean,
I love Twitter.
Do you post or you just read?
Oh, my God. I post. I read. I put pictures of, like, weird things that my dog does. I put pictures of the hedgehog on Twitter. It's super fun.
I'm following you. But see, this is the problem with it is why do you have the Sydney Opera House on your Twitter? Twitter.
Oh, I thought it was a nice picture.
Oh.
I don't post a lot of,
it would,
like,
make one think that you are Australian.
I'm Texan. It's like the same thing. Our accent isn't as cool, but that's basically with the same mentality.
Yeah, it might, that might be true, actually. Yeah, yeah.
And I love Australia. We went down to...
Oh, I do too. I love Australia, and the Sydney Opera House is gorgeous, just gorgeous. Have you been over the bridge, the Sydney Harbour Bridge?
Yes, yes. I thought, oh,
not
yeah,
me
in the mm-hmm. harbour.
But you can actually, Jeff, and I think you'd really enjoy this.
Oh no, literally say it. No, what did you say?
They put you in jumpsuits and give you, and they attach you to a wire, and you can go, climb the cable. All the Leo, way up, please. And over.
Oh, Leo.
We would have done it. We were there with Michael, who was at the time 1 week short of his 13th birthday, and you have to be 13 to go on it.
Yeah.
So we couldn't do it. But next time I'm in Sydney, I'm
save for yourselves. No, Leo, no, don't do it.
Definitely doing that.
Where
my palms, literally, my palms are flowing with sweat right now at the mere mention of it.
Are you afraid of heights, Jeff?
Of bridges.
Bridges, just bridges. But
somebody added, some smart ass Twig fan added that to my Wikipedia profile.
Oh.
They should add that you come to it honestly, because it, I don't know if you had it before 9/11, but it
got a lot worse.
It got a lot worse after 9/11. He was, Stacey, you probably don't know this, but he was coming into the PATH station when 9/11 happened.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be
freaky. Yeah, and was covered with
asbestos.
Asbestos and all sorts of crap. Any other stories you guys see that you really want to...
Open Cellular. But wait, do you have another ad, or was that all your ads?
I have another ad, but do the Open Cellular, and I'll do another ad, one more ad, before our Picks of the Week is what I'll do.
So Facebook, since we've been talking a little bit about wireless and access to the internet, they put out today, actually, this thing called Open Cellular, which is they have this telecom infrastructure project, which is basically designed to make telco infrastructure cheaper, is kind of the way to think about it, and easier to implement everywhere. So with Open Cellular, they're doing, it's like a access point is what it kind of looks like. It's got processing. It's got ways to make backhaul easier. So instead of just using fiber, you can use other things.
This is what Facebook did with their network operations centers and their servers. They just published the spec and said, here's how you can do that.
Yeah. And so this isn't open source yet, but it's going to. And the cool thing about Open Cellular or Open Cellular or their telecom infrastructure project is it's got Deutsche Telekom, EE and some other telecoms actually really interested in implementing this. And I'm not sure if they're going to do it in like European and high cost markets, or if they're going to do it more in like Africa and other places. But anything that makes your telecom infrastructure operate efficiently and at scale, like your computing infrastructure, is awesome, because it could potentially lower the cost of data. And that would be great for everyone.
This would only, I mean, the problem is I have with this is that if you're AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, or T-Mobile, you probably have, you know.
Yeah.
You already have your designs that you use.
So AT&T is actually moving to on their back-end infrastructure, they're actually moving to more of what looks like a compute core as opposed to
really?
The traditional. Yeah, I went into one of their, they have a test center here in Texas, for their wireless networks. And it's really like, if you're a super nerd like me, it's awesome, because you can see their 2G network takes up like two aisles of data center space. Their 3G network is like a full, or actually it's also like two aisles. And then their 4G is one aisle. And then their 5G, which is their next generation, it's called Domain 2.0. It's like one chassis with like a rack of servers, and that's it. And that's like, it's just crazy to me.
Software radios, baby. That's what's happening, man. It's happening in every business. You don't really need the hardware. You do it all in
software. So it's a software-defined network.
Yep.
And then this particular Open Cellular thing does have a software-defined radio, so it can cover more bands, or you could just do an SoC that is dedicated for certain bands.
It would just have basically the same software just built into the firmware. Wow. That's
so
cool.
Yeah, this is really awesome. I'm super optimistic.
I'm trying to think who would use this. I mean, would there be cell networks springing
up? Because you've got it does power over Ethernet. And look, I'm getting so excited. This is like the geeky
stuff
I live.
You're such a nerd.
But like with power over Ethernet, and you still have to get a license for the FCC if you're going to start like broadcasting like crazy. But you know, Facebook could build their own networks if they wanted to. They just have to. That's what's compelling.
So Google has the home, and Facebook has your phone.
Well, Google has efforts to bring more like network connectivity. Project Loon Google, or is that Facebook?
Loon is Google, and Facebook has the drones. But the problem is, in the U.S., this is a highly regulated area. You can't just put up your own cell towers. And
right.
I mean, I guess in the developing world, this would be amazing. And it's probably the intent for this, right?
That's my guess with the carrier partners where they would put this. But you never know. And anything that makes this stuff cheaper, I mean, I could see Sprint or T-Mo, which has nothing to lose,
right,
like trying to adopt a lower cost right. radio access network.
And but all four of the big carriers have spectrum that they've purchased, they leased, and they have access to.
Yes, but there's lots of people who have spectrum.
Is there kind of spectrum just available somebody could use and just... There's no... You wouldn't do it on 2.4. You wouldn't do it on an unregulated... I guess you could do it on an unregulated spectrum.
You couldn't define and control quality that way as well. But there's spectrum. So the economics and the math around spectrum is super complicated. But what's happening is we're able now with better silicon and software to use spectrum that previously was unavailable to us. So that's like what a lot of the gigahertz spectrum that people are excited about is about. So I don't know what these radios would work on, but there's a lot of companies that have spectrum, and they even like Dish has both spectrum and they have rooftop access to places where something like this could be really interesting. And that's a play that a lot of people don't think about, is that a company like Dish could, you know, basically put up little mini cell towers on people's roofs. Although AT&T owns Dish right now, so AT&T's probably thought about that.
There is a big spectrum auction just wrapping up right now, by the way. They expect it will be around $33 billion. This is a reverse auction.
That thing is so crazy.
600 megahertz spectrum.
I cannot wait to see what happens there.
Yeah. So during this process, the FCC and television broadcasters go through several rounds of bidding until the agency is able to purchase the most amount of spectrum at the lowest price. It's too complicated for my...
Oh, AT&T owns DirecTV, not Dish. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you, nice people.
That's right.
The reverse spectrum auction.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, that auction format is so nuts.
I don't get it. So FCC is trying to buy spectrum from the television broadcasters.
Yes, which they will turn around and sell.
Right. The FCC had to convince the broadcast owners that it was worth giving up their spectrum. Because at first the broadcast owners was like, no, this
is they made them give up 700 megahertz, right? They made them all go digital.
Yes, that was that. But the digital analog transition, what happened with this one is a little bit different. We won't get into like rebanding and all that crazy stuff. But basically what the FCC has done is the broadcaster said, I will give up my spectrum for $10 if you pay me $10. And so the FCC was like, okay, we'll give you $10 because we think the carriers are going to come around and give us $12.
Right.
$20.
Yeah.
So the FCC has done the half where the broadcaster said, we want this much, and the FCC negotiated with them, and they came to, I thought it was like an 86, it was a crazy number, but I don't know it off the top of my head. And now they're going to go, now that they've got that chunk in.
They got a commitment from broadcasters. Now they're going to telecom and saying, what will you give us? And that's where they're going for the $30 to $33 billion target.
And if this works... If they bid that, then we're all good. But the telcos may be like, you know what? We don't think it's worth that much.
T-Mobile has committed $8 billion. Okay. AT&T has committed $10 billion. Don't know what Verizon is bidding, but they're expected to participate. Sprint is sitting out the auction, but Comcast and Dish Network will also be bidding for this.
Oh, see, there's that Dish thing again.
Yeah.
Owning the rooftops.
Yeah.
Good for gigabit wireless. Ooh.
So the first half may be over is any day now, and yes. The next half will begin at the end of the month.
So here's the thing about this. In New Jersey, where I live, the government, this Chris Christie, owns the public broadcasting licenses. And when he decided to get out of that business, basically, he handed over the licenses to WNAT in New York and WHYY in Philadelphia. But he still owns them. They're licensed. And so estimates say that the state could get anywhere from, you know, $1 to $2 billion out of this. Now, the fear is that our dear governor will use this to plug the many holes he has in his Swiss cheese budget, where some of us believe that this was money that was, this was an asset that was meant to inform the state. And that there are those of us who believe that we should be able to get part, at least part of that money as a trust fund for news and information in the state. And there's some efforts going on to push that in the legislature.
Hmm. Have you, Stacey, seen the new Alexa skills? I guess I don't have to enable a skill anymore. I can tell.
You could just tell it.
Tell Amazon Echo, I want the fart skill, and it'll do it.
Right. Play. What was the fart? I've actually played with that.
I used to have to say ask for a fart.
Ask for a fart. Okay.
just in case you're keeping track.
Yes, Alexa, play my 7-minute workout.
I love that one.
I've only used it once. Yeah. It was
once
very
is enough.
Exciting.
No, it's 7 minutes in your whole life. That's all you need to do.
That's a
miracle.
No more working.
Miracle
out.
Of fitness.
I have seen that, and the new dash buttons and the new organization is really nice too.
So tell me about that.
So they reorganized the way Alexa skills, and I should
which
stop
was
saying
the
your name.
Worst.
Sorry.
Echo.
Yes.
Echo.
The Echo, well, it's hard to say it with the app. Anyway, they reorganized the way the skills are set up. So now you can, they're like organized by like smart home.
It
or
was terrible.
Intuition.
You had to just go through page after page of random skills.
And now, I mean, there's more than 1,400 of them. So at a certain point in time, you're like, screw it, I'm done.
Yeah. I never got past page 5.
Yeah, I found one I liked and I stuck with it.
Yeah,
I didn't even know they had a Jeopardy skill, but now.
Oh, I do that one all the time. I love that one. So this is more like an app store now, which is nice. They have highlighted skills, they have trending, and then they have categories. Get entertained. That's the Jeopardy one. Make your home smarter. Business and finance connected car. This is good. This is a lot. They needed to do this badly.
Yes.
But they were probably just waiting. I mean, they have 1,500 plus skills now. A Yo Mama joke. So all you have to do is you say, Echo, open Yo Mama joke, and now it'll do it. President's picker. Ask Doc Rogers why I'm happy today. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. That's not under the novelty category.
Oh, I should say, let's see if it's Fred Wilson. They actually did a thing. He did a blog post because one of his partners implemented an Echo hack that lets you play your Sonos over your Echo or control your Sonos.
Oh, so I want that to work. I want that to work so badly. Although I have my Dot hooked up to a very nice speaker system now. So in the bedroom, at least, I have good Echo audio. Also, you can buy anything on Prime now. It doesn't have to have been something you bought previously.
Oh, yeah.
So I accidentally bought some emergency underpants the other day.
How did you accidentally do that?
What are emergency underpants?
Didn't know, but apparently I got them, and they come in. I meant to bring them in. They come in a roll in case you need them. And so I thought this would be funny on the radio show. I said, Echo, buy some underpants. And then nice lady says, I found emergency underpants. Would you like to order it? And I had to demo it. I was demoing it. So I said, you know, I gave it my magic number, and then they arrived. They arrived the next day. I guess they really thought I was an emergency.
Lisa gets the mail and just shouts.
Really? She did wonder. I guess they just realized when you need underpants,
do they know
an emergency,
the right size?
I think it's one size fits all.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know. All right, actually, I do. Boxers or tighty whities?
I didn't try them on. I just have them in a box. But I'm guessing they're tighty whities, but I, again, don't know. I'll tell you what. I'll do some research, and I'll tell you next week.
Okay.
You'll find out. No, I'm really pleased. I keep meaning to study up on how to write Echo skills because it'd be so useful to have. Like, we ought to have a TWiT skill. I mean, it's crazy that I don't have a TWiT skill. So
it is crazy. And yeah. I put under my Stacey's thing the Sonos hack from Fred Wilson. So
oh, thank you.
See the blog post.
That could be your thing.
Oh, I have another Echo related thing.
Okay, two things. Does Fred Wilson own, is he an investor in Sonos or Echo, or is he just like an interested party?
He's a huge fan.
I guess
huge
so.
Huge fan.
Yeah. Huge fan for years.
And there's a lot of Sonos hacks out there. Like if you Google that, you can find some of them. They're not easy, which is why people right. don't do it.
So his friend Steven used the Skills interface, which is really, it's open to anybody. Use Amazon's Lambda Cloud, and if you don't do a lot of requests, it doesn't cost you anything. If you publish it, then it can cost you something. And then it sends instructions to a server on the laptop. Oh, see, that's what you need. That it runs the code that controls the Sonos on his home network. So you have to have some intermediate system that can access the Sonos network and do the work for you. You know, a Raspberry Pi could probably do this pretty well. It feels like somebody's already done that for some reason. I don't know. Oops. Yeah. Why Sonos hasn't done this is beyond me.
Oh, they're still trying to figure it. They still haven't published an API for their smart home stuff, even though they've promised.
They need to do that. All right, let's take a break, and we will get your picks, your twits, your numbers, whatever it is you want to end this show with. We call it the back of the book coming up in just a second. Smart things. Dr. Mom is saying smart things works fine with the Echo and the Sonos. So that could be the thing that intermediates. Okay. I didn't know that.
It does. You can only, though, play your favorites.
Oh.
And I think, can you do volume up and down? It's been so long since I've played with the smart things Sonos.
I just have my Dot paired via Bluetooth to a very nice JBL stereo powered speaker system. I can do all the commands. It's great. It's in the bedroom. I can rock out. It's wonderful. I can do playlists from Pandora and Spotify and listen to books, and it's just great. I love it.
Yeah, you just can't. With smart things, you can't play an exact song because I've got my Sonos set up on my Echo, but you just...
No, see, like the other day, we had the day off. It was the 4th of July, I think, and I wanted to dance naked. And I said, Echo, play Madonna Celebrate. Or Holiday, that was it. And I danced naked. And that's what you need the Echo for. She doesn't judge.
Instead, she sends you emergency underwear. She's sending you a message, actually.
Can't get that out of my head.
Holiday, it would be so right.
Oh, I think, was it the 25th or 30th birthday for True Blue? Because wasn't Holiday on True Blue? That was my first cassette tape I ever bought.
Wow. Yeah. I've touched a nerve.
Touched a touchstone, basically.
Touched a touchstone. Yep. Let's kick things off with Stacey Higginbotham. By the way, can I just make a recommendation that you subscribe to her newsletter? You know, if everybody listening to this show, it's free, right, Stacey?
It is totally free.
If everybody listening to this show right now went to Stacey on IoT, well, first of all, we bring the site down. But then after the site came back up and subscribed to the newsletter, I bet maybe we wouldn't. You would triple your audience instantly, and you should. You deserve it. You get this. You can tell what a brilliant analyst Stacey is. She really knows her stuff. So sign up. It's the free weekly IoT newsletter, and you'll find it at stacyoniot.com. I want to give you a big plug. I don't plug it enough.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you can see she's doing all the research. You're doing all the reporting. And this time you're doing it for yourself, which I love.
It's true. This is how I'm going to make my money.
No, and support it. No, I think it's great. I want to support it. And then, of course, the podcast is iotpodcast.com. You do that with Kevin Toefel. Also must listen. In fact, you did a whole episode on the new Alexa skills.
Yes, we did. And the wink. And this tomorrow, my episode coming out has a cool thing on insurance and the smart home. And
great.
Super fun.
Do you? So you're using, did you ever get a Luma? You're using the Eero.
I'm using the Eero.
And then the Luma is delayed. I have an order, but no shipping yet. And then there's Plume, which is later this year and is the least expensive of the three, but I think similar.
Totally different architecture.
Oh, it is. Okay.
You're like, not similar.
It's not similar. It's not a mesh thing.
It's not a mesh. It's controlled in the cloud. So you get like six radios with no intelligence in them, and the radios, all the intelligence lives in the cloud.
Okay. Well, it's worth a try. I'm going to review all of them. By the way, you said you were getting great results with your Eero, and I've set the Eero up. I don't know. Did I mention this last week? It's been working great.
Oh, it has? Okay, yeah, you said it was
I had
bad.
A very bad experience with two. They sent me a set, didn't work. Sent me another set, didn't work. Must have just been, it was very early. I don't even know if they were in production yet. But the production unit I have now is easily the best Wi-Fi we've had in the house.
So which one do you guys recommend?
Well, the problem with the Eeros is really expensive. It's $500 for three units. But that's what you're using, Stacey, right?
That's what because beforehand I had all these access points, and every time I tried to mess with my router, my husband would get mad at me because, God, my network was held together by duct tape and a perk.
No, me too. Lisa did the ultimate insult. She said, well, we could just bring Russell in and do it. And that was like, oh, just stab me in the heart. You're married to the tech guy and you want to bring in Russell? Just kill me now. So I wouldn't let her because I have too much pride. But it also put the pressure on. I had to find a solution that worked.
Yeah.
But this word, the Eero works great. I've been really, and the speed is very good. Not much, hugely better, but very good. And the coverage is a lot better.
Yeah, we've got coverage all the way from our garage to our rooftop deck.
Yeah.
And we've only got three, so.
Yeah. But they're $200 each. Very expensive. Yeah. I mean, the best routers you can get are $200. So.
Yeah, but as you start connecting more crap into your house, you're going to be like, you need Wi-Fi.
I had Airport Express and Airport Extremes. That didn't work. Took those all out. Got a ASUS AC3200, which is an excellent, really, my favorite Wi-Fi router. But it didn't have enough. It didn't cover far enough. So then I was using TP-Link power line adapters to get the Wi-Fi out into the edges. And, oh, my God. It was a nightmare. This just worked. It's great. So thank you. I apologize to Eero but I just could never get it working. Now that it is, I'm very happy with it. Eero. But Luma is very similar, right? That's similar, but I think $100 less.
It is. It's $100 less, similar mesh network.
Yeah.
Their angle is security and parental controls, although Eero just announced parental controls.
They have a really kind of nice parental control where you can say this MAC address, this one right here, this is off during dinner and after 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
I will say, though, here's my complaint. I want to know what my devices are. And right now when I look, people, name your freaking devices.
Right. I agree. You can, by the way, if you figure it out, and you might have to use the MAC address, you can name it. You can reserve an IP address for it. I do port forwarding with it. It's not as sophisticated as like the AC3200. It doesn't have nearly the number of settings. Right. Doesn't seem to have QoS. A lot of the stuff is done in the cloud, which means you don't know if it's being done or not. They say they're, for instance, that they're noting what kinds of devices you have and tuning your network to work best with a Roku or Apple TV or whatever you have attached. I have to take that on faith. But it works quite well. And I'll be curious about the Luma, and then I'll get a Plume too. As I'm sure you will, and we'll keep you up on
this. I'm still, you haven't answered the question.
Get the Eero?
Which one do you buy?
Well, you can only buy one right now. That's the only one available is the Eero.
I know that, but
it works.
Yep.
I think the two negatives are price. Three negatives are price. The fact that you have to give them a real phone number or email address. You have to have an account with them. They say that so that they can keep it up to date, right?
No, they said it because it's in lieu of a password because the CEO noted that everybody was using like Wi-Fi 1234.
Right.
And that was crappy security. So they changed their setup to require
that works.
Number.
So it is more secure that way. They say they update constantly, which is unlike any router you've ever used before.
Yeah.
The third negative is it doesn't have as many fiddly bits. That may be a positive depending on who you are, but it worked. It does all the things. I have a server running on inside the network, and it works fine with port forwarding. So, and the fact that I can do a reservation, so I can lock in an IP address and do port forwarding is nice. So anyway, I would not hesitate to recommend it if you don't mind spending $500. And you can add more, by the way. $500 gives you three, but if you want to add a few more, you can because it's mesh. And Stacy's using it in a better way, which is she's got Ethernet to all of them. But I'm using it Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and if you use it Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi, you're going to see a slight drop in your speeds.
But that's true of all repeater setups.
Yes, that's how that works.
Yeah. So your pick. I'm sorry, Stacy. I didn't mean to interrupt your pick, but I just wanted to thank you and apologize for dissing your Eero.
I don't take my tech as personally, I think, as you do.
I take it very personally.
I'm like, you can hate my routers. They work.
I hate your router.
My pick is an app called Lexa, which is kind of like Echo Sim. But what it does, the cool thing is you don't have to have your own Echo. You just have to have an Amazon account. You can treat it like an Echo. So let me do this because I gotta make my.
Now don't confuse this with the Dutch Lexa dating for singles.
Oh, app. I didn't know that.
That's also on Google Play.
This is what it looks like. I can't do reverse stuff.
Yeah, it's got a big button.
And when you press the button,
yeah.
She didn't hear me. Sorry,
I'm not sure what's going wrong. You pushed the button, but you didn't say anything.
Exactly. I was like, I froze. I didn't know what to ask her because I realized I don't have any lights or anything that could turn on and off in here.
It's from UCIC if you're searching for it on the App Store.
Is it only Apple or is it
Android?
Android and iOS. Company that did this.
Yeah, it's hard to find. That's the problem. Search for UCIC. Alexa UCIC, I think. I actually went to an article about it and then clicked the link.
So it's basically an Echo in your pocket. So you could use it again. I showed you an app a couple weeks ago called Rogers that turns it into a remote control. But here they say, and because I have my Amazon account tied to my Echo and Dot, I can't try this. So I'm curious if someone who doesn't have one can try it and see. I doubt it would control your smart home stuff because that needs the radios and stuff in your house. But you could ask it all the things you ask the Echo.
Huh. Lexa, Lexa by UCIC.
They just used the API that was put out?
I assume so. This company's kind of cool. It's been around for a long time. They started out building something that was almost exactly like the Echo, but Amazon did it way better. And so.
Give me a fart noise.
No, ask for a fart. But you have to first say add the ask for a fart skill, right?
Ask for a fart skill. She's not quite sure how to help me with that.
Yeah, maybe that's interesting. That's a really interesting idea. But, of course, Amazon should just build this into the Alexa app and it'd be a game over.
Right. This company is probably, this is what they've encountered their entire life. So.
Yeah, right. Maybe they should try to find some greenfield technology they could get involved in.
So maybe this is the one that lets
this is the one.
And maybe Amazon will buy them, but I kind of doubt it. I use it as a remote for...
The ask for a fart skill.
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
That's even her voice, isn't it? That's kind of cool. Buy underpants.
Based on Leo's order history, I found Accoutrements Emergency Underpants Dispenser. It's $7.57 total. To order it, tell me Leo's voice code.
Never. No. I already have a pair.
Well, there you go.
Wait, it's an emergency underpants dispenser?
Yes.
So how you don't have the underpants.
Underpants, Leo.
It's at home. I don't know.
Do you hang it on the wall? Oh,
yes.
Reach over and pull out a pair of pants.
It's possibly a joke app, but I didn't get that novelty. But I didn't get that feeling. I had the feeling it was really a response to a perceived need.
Oh, maybe it's for, like, depends. Maybe it's like
something. Well, yeah, or you had an accident or something, and you need something in an emergency.
I really want to know more about that. I'll just look it up on Amazon.
You know, here's in our chat room, they have an article, apparently, about it. Here's a picture, anyway.
So always ready to use.
Yeah.
Do I have underwear that's not ready to use?
Just grab and go.
Oh, it's in the little Kleenex box.
Oh, actually, yeah. It's kind of pricey. It's $13 for one pair.
Great gag gift. Useful as well.
It's a gag gift that's useful. Oh, no, there's five pairs. There's five pairs.
And secure.
Yeah.
Well, there's also a one pair. Archie McPhee's. Uh-oh.
Oh, if it's from Archie McPhee, it's not serious.
Oh, okay.
Jeff, your number of the week.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to figure out how to dispense underpants. Or dispense with them, as the case may be. So in 1995, Kurt Vonnegut gave a lecture in which he said that you could take all the stories there ever were, put them in a computer, and figure out the shape of them. And indeed, Andrew Reagan at the Computational Story Lab at the University of Vermont in Burlington and a few pals analyzed 1,700 stories and found 6 core trajectories, which I love. So here they are. 1, a steady ongoing rise in emotional valence, as in a rags-to-riches story such as Alice's Underground, Adventures Underground. 2, a steady ongoing fall in emotional valence, as in a tragedy such as Romeo and Juliet. 3, a fall, then a rise, such as the Man in a Hole story discussed by Vonnegut. 4, a rise, then a fall, such as the Greek myth of Icarus. 5, rise, fall, rise, such as Cinderella. And 6, fall, rise, fall, such as Oedipus. So that's it. There are no new stories. There are only 6.
Wow. It kind of makes sense.
It does.
Yeah. And it really all has to, it all has to do with the rise and the fall.
Yeah.
That would be that narrative arc.
Yeah.
You can see the shape of the arc. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is very cool. There's a video as well, apparently. I didn't watch it.
What's interesting is that it really did it. I mean, it's real. It's not... my tip comes from Tech Republic. I love you, Tech Republic. Jason Heiner's publication. And I was going to kind of do it, but I think I'll just refer to the article. It turns out, and I did not know this, that Google Keep has transcription capabilities. It can OCR an image. Did you know that?
It did. Google did keep did the world's worst voice transcription I've ever had. I cannot make any sense of it.
Well, it's famous for that. I don't have any images, unfortunately, in my Google Keep. But the idea is, if you have an image that has text in it, I used to use Evernote for this. And, you know, Evernote raised their fee about 40% on Evernote Premium. And I'm probably going to stick around because I haven't found anything anywhere near as good. But I have been looking at alternatives. And Keep would be one of the obvious alternatives. Keep is a Google's free note-keeping. There it is. Free note-keeping app. The problem is it's all in one page. It doesn't really have the kind of organizational features. I use it. In general, I use it just to do the most, you know, like shopping lists and the most recent stuff. But if you have an image in there, it turns out that once you've got the image, you can open the note, click on the three-dot menu, and from the pop-up, there is a menu item, grab image text, and it will do it instantly because, of course, Google has more CPU cycles than God. And you can quickly get the text from an image using Google Keep. And here's the Tech Republic demo. They had some poster from iZombie. If you scroll down a little bit there, Karsten, you can see that it adds the text and it does a pretty, at least at this example, pretty credible job. Unfortunately, I don't have any images in my Keep, and I meant to do that before the show today. But Just thought I'd pass it along as a useful tip. There is there in the menu item on your notes. If you have images with text, try the OCR free and built in to Google Keep.
If I may.
It's great. Yeah.
Let's see here. I thought it's like, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night, you think you have a good idea. I was driving and I had to make a note. So yeah. I'll use Keep.
Yeah. And you transcribed
Google Privacy
it.
First level, three practices, one transparency, salute transparency, about 10 smartest people to accessibility 3000, new expression of the value to both parties, and resume before I'm watching that thought you were asleep to write a review about relation and said he was working Christmas wishing well.
Well, I understand perfectly.
It makes as much sense as anything I write.
Yeah, when I wake up.
In the middle of the night, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Ah, my friends, I hate to do it, but it's time to say goodnight. You guys is great. I am really thrilled to have Stacey Higginbotham part of the team. Now, this is the core team. We've been talking to Dan Lyons, and he's been traveling as much as you, Jeff. So we're hoping to get him on the team as well, and that'll be a lot of fun. He's, of course, the former fake Steve Jobs, one of the funniest guys in tech reporting, and most recently worked at the TV show Silicon Valley, where he was a staff writer. And he has a book called Disrupted, which is wonderful. So we hope to get him on very soon.
Cool.
Meanwhile, you can find Stacey at StaceyOnIoT.com. Subscribe to her newsletter, because who wouldn't want more Stacey in their inbox? I say, every week. Thank you so much for being here, Stacey. We appreciate it. Jeff Jarvis is at BuzzMachine.com. That's his blog. Don't forget, if you are looking for a good journalism school, there's none better than CUNY. You can find him there during the season, professing. That's what he does. Also a regular contributor to Medium. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
I'm going to argue with you on the journalism school.
Oh, yeah? You got a better one?
I got my alma mater.
Hey.
Is that U of T?
It is U of T.
Watch it.
Hook 'em horns. Or are those?
It's in New York here.
Oh, I don't know. See?
Did you study with the wonderful Rosenthal Alves?
I did. He taught my favorite class.
What was that?
It was international reporting. He used to tell us to meet him outside, and he would pretend to be a Colombian dictator, and he would hold a press conference.
Oh, fun.
It was awesome. I had him and, let's see, Rusty Todd, who whenever we would come in, he used to work at the Wall Street Journal, and he did financial journalism, and at the class was held at the end of the closing of the Wall Street, and we'd have to come in and write an earnings story or stock market story. We had 20 minutes. Go.
Real world experience.
So not all of UT was that way, but those were guys. Those were good. Jeff, I'm sure you
have the best journalism school in the world.
Come
to CUNY.
I'm just awed. I'm working with two professional journalists here, and I am a mere amateur, but I'm glad we could have you to add some gravitas to the show, both of you. We do Twig this week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Time, 20:30 UTC. Hope you'll join us live, be in studio with us. We got a pair of fathers and sons, which is so, so cool. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make a seat ready for you, available for you. And, of course, you can join us in the chat room as well. If you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact. You'll find it at twit.tv/twig, twit.tv/twig, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can just subscribe and get it each and every week. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.